Hey!
Are you listening?
When you find yourself in danger, when you're threatened by a stranger, when it looks like you will take a licking, there is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call
OTR.
The Johnson Wax Program with Fibber McGee and Molly.
It's time for My Favorite Husband, starring Lucille Ball.
Hello, everybody.
A new series based on Isabel Scott Rorick's gay, sophisticated Mr. and Mrs. Cougar, starring Lucille Ball with Richard Denny.
Our Miss Brooks, starring Eve Arden. Our Miss Brooks is an English teacher at Madison High School. She can tell you everything you need to know about the present and past subjunctive, but she's not at all sure about the future. That is, her romantic future with biology teacher Philip Boynton.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Joseph Schlitz Brewing Company of Milwaukee, Wisconsin presents The Halls of Ivy, starring Mr. and Mrs. Ronald Coleman.
You bet your life. Groucho Marx in You Bet Your Life, the comedy quiz series produced and transcribed from Hollywood. And here he is, the one, the only...
Hey, that's me, Groucho Marx.
Now, here is your guide, these adventures of mine.
Now, here is OTR.
Hey, everyone, this is OTR Rob, welcoming you to another edition of Fibber McGee and Molly. This episode is from February 26th, 1946. The episode is entitled Fibber's Pen is Missing, and pay close attention to the episode. There's going to be a young man entering the McGee home named Mr. Houghton Trout. Mr. Houghton Trout is played by Jim Jordan Jr., the son of Jim Jordan or Fibber McGee, whatever way you want to take it. So I thought I would bring that up. And after that is My Favorite Husband from January 27th, 1951. George is drafted. Oh, no. And after that is Our Miss Brooks from February 25th, 1951. The episode is entitled Going Skiing, and The Halls of Ivy from March 5th, 1952. The episode is entitled Astronomy Exam. And after that is You Bet Your Life. And the secret word is floor. And it's from 1950. I don't know what month. October 18th, 1950. That's where it is. Okay, got it. All right, we're straight. Good. Enjoy the shows. I'll see you all back here next week. Stay safe. God willing, the creeks don't rise. Wear your mask, social distance, do all that stuff. Be safe. Get your vaccine. It won't kill you. What will kill you is the virus.
The Johnson Wax Program with Fibber McGee and Molly. Johnson's Wax, Johnson's Car New, and Johnson's Self-Polishing Glow Coat present Fibber McGee and Molly, written by Don Quinn, with music by the King's Men and Billy Mills Orchestra. past few weeks, I've mentioned quite a few unusual uses for Johnson's Wax. As a matter of fact, I've been getting some very interesting letters passing along more of these helpful suggestions, and I intend to mention them from time to time. But today, I'd like to go back for just a moment to fundamentals and talk about the real number one purpose of Johnson's Wax, the principal reason for using it. It's protection, of course. Protection for the finish of your floors, your tabletops, windowsills, yes, and your leather goods, refrigerator, and countless other things. The wax itself takes the wear. The finish underneath is safe. That's why in times like these, it's so important to keep your floors, furniture, and woodwork regularly waxed. After all, it does save you hours of work, too. And that's important right now for all of us. And it makes your entire home gleam and glow with protected beauty. Lincoln and Washington have had their birthdays. In fact, it might as well be spring, which is about the time the Squire of Wistful Vista starts writing his Christmas thank you notes, urged on by his conscience, otherwise known as Mrs. McGee. And here about to start the job, we find Fibber McGee and Molly.
Now, the first note you ought to write, dearie, is...
I haven't got to that yet. I got to write a check first.
Whom to?
The Elks Club, $5.
Heavenly days, have you ripped the billiard table cloth again?
Nope, the caretaker's got to have appendicitis operation and can't afford it, so all the members are chipping in $5 apiece.
Oh, yeah? Well, that's very nice, I'm sure. Yep. Say, is the caretaker that big fat man named Joe?
Yeah, that's the fella, Charlie. Doc Gamble's going to do the operation.
I never knew Dr. Gamble to wait till somebody had enough money before he'd operate.
Oh, Doc, don't care. But the boys at the club say they hate to see a pot opened without a few chips on the table. Now, let me see. Where's my... Uh-oh.
What's the matter?
Can't find my fountain pen. You see my fountain pen? The one with the solid gold point onto it?
No, I haven't, Pet. You had it yesterday, though.
My gosh, I'd hate to lose that fountain pen. Fred Nittany gave me that pen.
Who?
Fred Nittany. You heard me speak of Fred Nittany from Starved Rock, Illinois. He's the guy that I and he used to have a vaudeville act together in Vaudeville.
Oh, sure. That Fred Nittany.
Mm-hmm.
Did he give you the pen for Christmas?
No, he gave me that pen in 1922. We signed our first contract with that pen.
Oh, with the Orpheum Circuit?
No, just with each other. I promised I wouldn't sneeze while he was juggling, and he promised not to mug while I was singing Give the Baby a Lacing, Mother. He just threw another shoe. That was one of my...
Come in.
Hello there, kid. How's everything?
Oh, hello, old-timer. Everything's fine, thank you.
Yeah, except I seem to have lost a very valuable fountain pen.
Lost a what, Johnny?
I lost a
fountain pen, eh? That's too bad. I'd let you take mine, but I haven't got one.
Well, this pen of mine has got a lot of sentimental value to me, old-timer. My old vaudeville partner gave me it.
Your old what, Johnny?
My old...
Gee, Willikers, were you in vaudeville, Johnny? So was I.
Well, were you really, old-timer? What kind of an act did you have?
Magic, daughter. Used to saw a lady in half, but I couldn't stand it very long.
Why not?
Hey!
I says, why couldn't
Well, sure, every time I'd see my assistant off stage, he'd kind of laugh and say, who was that lady I sawed with you last night? I got so sick of that joke, I give up the act and joined the CBs. That was right after Pearl Harper.
You mean Pearl Harbor?
No, Pearl Harper, daughter. She was the girl I sawed in half. She took on so much weight, it stretched my act 10 minutes, sawing her in two.
I had a song and dance act myself, old-timer.
Yeah, the only way I can get my husband to dance even now is to pay him for it.
That's pretty good, daughter. But that ain't the way I heard it. The way I heard it, one feller says to his doctor, say, he says, every time I eat strawberries, my skin breaks out. Can you cure me? I don't know, says the doctor. I hate to make any rash promises. Well, I hope you find your pen, daughter.
McGee, where'd you use your fountain pen last?
I know I had it yesterday when I was making out my income tax. Hey, what was I wearing yesterday?
Let me see. Your blue serge suit.
I was?
Yes.
Oh, well, my gosh, all I got to do is run upstairs and look in the vest pocket.
No, McGee.
Huh?
Your blue serge suit went to the cleaner this morning.
What? With my fountain pen in it?
Yeah.
Didn't you go through the pockets before you sent it?
Well, Natch, I always do. But I didn't see anything of your fountain pen. May have slipped down through the lining, though.
Doggone those cleaners anyway. Deliberately walking out of here with my blue serge suit with my fountain pen in it. That's practically burglary, that's what it is. That's stealing.
Oh, for goodness sakes, now, if they find it, they'll return it. They're very reliable people.
Well, they better find it, that's all I gotta say. Walking into people's houses like that and practically stealing people's valuable gold-pointed fountain pens that Fred Nittany give them. If that's the way people are running their business nowadays, I'm glad I'm not living 100 years from now if it gets any worse.
Now, nonsense, dear. You're making a big fuss about nothing. You fly off the handle like a 30-cent hammer.
I'm going to fly down to that cleaning place and make them return my fountain pen. Get your hat and coat, baby.
I'll just do that little thing, McGee. Huh? Even if you don't find your fountain pen, the fresh air will cool you off a little.
Yeah.
Now, you lock up the house whilst I get my...
Okay, betcha. Make it snappy. All of them. Ah, there goes a good kid. How she ever puts up with these nasty moods of mine, I'll never know. Except that she knows they never last more than a half hour. Once a week. Usually Tuesdays. But even so, I'm... Come in.
Hi, mister.
Oh, hello there, Teeny. State your business briefly now, sis, because I'm very busy right now. I got to get downtown.
Oh. Well, gee, mister, I didn't come over here because I wanted to. I came because you told me to.
What?
You told me to come over yesterday, remember?
No, I don't.
Well, you did, I betcha.
What were the circumstances?
Well, the circumstances were I saw you in the drugstore, and Mr. Toops was weighing himself, and you got on the scale with him and divided the weight by two so you wouldn't have to pay another penny. And I said you were cheating the drugstore man. You said, don't be nosy, and if I came over today, you'd tell me a story. Those were the circumstances.
Well, I'm sorry, sis. I haven't got time today. Maybe some other time.
Okay. Okay, I'll tell. I'll tell everybody. I'll tell the drugstore man and the newspaper.
Okay, 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 okay. Cut it out. I'll tell you a story.
Thanks, mister. You're awful nice to little children.
Okay. I ever tell you about Myrtle the turtle?
Oh. No.
Well, sir... Once upon a time, there lived a turtle named Myrtle.
Mm-hmm.
She laid dozens and dozens of eggs, and they all hatched out into little baby turtles, so everybody called her Myrtle the Fertile Turtle. One day, there was a big earthquake, which threw Myrtle over on her back. And when a turtle gets through on its back, it's just simply helpless. Yes, sir. Well, sir, the baby turtles were too dumb to know what to do. They thought Mama was just taking some exercises, so they hung around and watched while she kicked her legs this way and that, jerking and twitching. And she made so much commotion that some turtle hunters saw her and grabbed her and all the young turtles and sold them all to a restaurant, and they all wound up as turtle soup. And you know what that all goes to prove, sis?
Sure I do, I betcha.
What?
Just because you're upset about something, you don't have to get everybody else in a stew.
Right. Billy Milley, I got the house all locked up. Let's get down to that dry cleaners. I'm going to read them fountain pen stealers the riot act. I wouldn't be a bit surprised if they'd planned this whole thing. Just waiting for a chance to get my gold-pointed fountain pen.
I'll bet you're right, McGee.
You betcha.
Yes, sir. I'll bet they invested $50,000 in that dry cleaning plant 19 years ago with the very idea in mind of someday getting a hold of your $5 fountain pen.
Well, that ain't so silly. How about the time I left my wallet and my gray pants with $17 in it? How about that?
Well, how about it? They returned it the next day, didn't they?
Sure they did. And why? Just to keep me from getting suspicious, that's why. If they're out after fountain pens, they ain't going to money around with mere monkey. I mean, monkey around with mere money. By George.
Looks like we wouldn't be leaving for a minute, McGee. Come in.
Hello, Molly.
Hello there, Dr. Gamble. Come right in.
Thank you. What are you looking so sour about, Persimmon Puss?
You'd look sour, too, Aerosmith, if somebody had deliberately stole your solid gold-pointed fountain pen that had been given to you by Fred Nittany from Starved Rock.
Not really stolen, Doctor. He left it in a suit that went to the cleaner, he thinks.
Better be careful of those accusations, Chowderhead. Or one of these days, you're going to be the surprised possessor of a slander suit with two pairs of pants. Incidentally, who's Fred Nittany, if anybody?
Why, Fred Nittany's his old vaudeville partner, Doctor. He gave McGee the fountain pen years ago.
Vaudeville? Were you in vaudeville, McGee? I used to go to the theater every week when I was a young man going to medical school. I don't remember seeing you.
So what? I don't remember seeing you either. Well, the 15-cent seats were usually so far back.
Oh, I almost forgot, McGee.
Forgot what, Castle Happy?
Are you coming to the board meeting at the Elks tonight? Only 10 or 12 left.
I can't make it, Doc. I'm sorry. You take 6 for me, will you? I'll pay you later.
Okay. Good night, Molly.
Night.
All right.
Take 6 of what for you, McGee? What kind of a board meeting is it?
Punch board. Oh. Hey, we got to get down to the dry cleaners, Molly. Every minute we waste is more time for them burglars to hide the evidence. Come on, let's go. Bye, George.
Now, just a minute, McGee. Are you sure you left it in that suit? Have you looked around the house thoroughly?
No, and I don't have to. I always carry that pen in that blue serge suit. On account of it leaks a little, and the blue serge suit don't show it. And furthermore...
Hello, folks. I just thought I'd drop... Oh, you're going out?
Down to the dry cleaners, Mr. Wilcox. They have a suit of McGee's in which he thinks he left a valuable to nobody but him fountain pen.
The intrinsic value is of no import. It's the sentimental value, Junior. My old vaudeville partner, Fred Nittany, from Starved Rock, Illinois, gave me that pen.
He thinks more of his pen than the government does of Alcatraz, Mr. Wilson.
You know how sentimental all these old vaudevillians are, Molly. I was an actor once, and I know.
What do you mean, once? You're so hammy right now, you use mustard-flavored shaving cream.
McGee.
Well, he's right, Molly. I still have a kind of a yen to go back on the stage. You know, I always wanted to do Romeo.
Do Juliet a favor, Buster, and lay off. You're getting a little broad across the pistol pockets for tights.
Oh, I don't know about that, McGee. I think Mr. Wilcox would be a very handsome Romeo. Do you know the part, Mr. Wilcox?
Oh, sure. As a matter of fact, I just wrote it out for a little entertainment they're putting on tomorrow night for the Johnson Wax salesman. Here, see? Ah.
Look, Junie, anytime you write Shakespeare for them guys, the stage is going to be hip-deep in Johnson's wax. Enter Lady Macbeth, lower left, with a roll-top desk. That kind of stuff.
Oh, but McGee, this looks awfully good. Read it, Mr. Wilcox.
Okay, I'll be Romeo. You read Juliet's part.
Oh, my gosh, this is going to set Orson Welles back 20 years.
You be quiet now, McGee. Go ahead, Mr. Wilcox.
Act 2, Scene 2, Capulet's Garden. Enter Romeo.
On a high-wheel bicycle.
Hush, dearie.
Enter Romeo. He jests at scars that never felt a wound.
Juliet appears above at window.
With shotgun.
But soft, what light through yonder window breaks? It is the east, and Juliet is the sun.
Ah, me.
She speaks. What dost thou, fair Juliet?
I dust yon living room, my Romeo. My father, the Capulet, would have a prideful home. So Johnson's wax protects his worldly goods. And I, no slave to household task, make light of labor thus so neatly foiled.
Ain't this awful, folks?
Ah, sweet Juliet, a goodly spouse you'll make. To know that dust and dirt cling not to wax-protected things.
That's Capulet.
Would that our love could be as well preserved.
It can, my Romeo, and gleam as brightly as a Johnson-polished home. This very balcony from which I speak, its wood is shielded from the elements by wax. Where's the rest of this, Romeo? Or Mr. Wilcox?
Well, that's all I had time to do. I'm going to finish it this evening. How do you like it?
If you're asking me, Waxy, I'll settle for Olson and Johnson. Your Shakespeare's as phony as a 6-bit and a rinse.
I thought it was wonderful, Mr. Wilcox. Have you got to go now?
Yeah. I'll see you later, folks.
Whence goest thou, Romeo?
Homeo.
Oh.
Oh, goodness, isn't he talented, McGee? I think he has a great flair for the theater.
Yeah. If he had any bigger flair, our fire insurance wouldn't be worth a nickel. Hey, what time is it?
It's almost half past.
Oh, my gosh. We got to get going, Molly. Them dry cleaners might be closed up and skipping town by this time. Doggone it, we never will get out of here at this rate.
I think there's a power watching over you, dearie, trying to keep you from making a dunce of yourself. Come in. Oh, good afternoon, Mrs. Carstairs. Do come in.
How do you do, my dear? I see you have your coat on. Am I detaining you?
We're just going down to the dry cleaners, Carsty. They stole my fountain pen.
Oh, now, wait a minute, McGee. That's a serious charge to make, you know.
If it was the Wistful Vista dry cleaners, Mr. McGee, I must say I have always found them extremely meticulous.
Aha, you hear that, Molly? Even Carsty says they're meticulous. I knew it. I had a feeling
meticulous,
from
the... Meticulous, dearie, meticulous means careful.
Huh? Oh, it does?
Yeah.
Is that what you meant, Carsty?
Yes, Mr. McGee.
Oh.
Mr. Carstairs has left jewelry in his pockets many, many times, and the cleaners have always returned it immediately. He's so absent-minded, you know.
Is he really, Millicent?
Oh, yes, indeed, my dear. Why, just last night, as we were coming home in a taxicab from a rather gay party, he leaned over to me and said, "Remember now, not a word of this to my wife."
What did you say, Carsty?
Oh, I said, "Of course not, dear. But you better get out a block or two from the house." And he did.
Oh, it must be a little disturbing to be married to a man like him, Millicent.
Oh, he's quite harmless, Mrs. McGee. One can't dislike a beagle merely because he thinks he's a wolf. Oh, which reminds me, my dear, will you go to the dog show with me Friday afternoon?
Sure she will, Carsty, and so will I.
You... how nice.
I just love dog shows, Millicent. Is your dog in the show?
Oh, yes, she is, and I hope she goes through with it this year.
Why? What happened last year, Carsty?
At the last minute, she scratched herself.
Oh, God.
Well, I do hope you find your pen, Mr. McGee. Good day.
Dry cleaning place, McGee?
Next block, Oak Street, near 14th. Do you see those green lamps in the middle of the block there?
Yes, what's that?
Police station. And if these fountain pen thieves don't pony over my gold-pointed fountain pen immediately or sooner, I'm going to swear out a warrant that...
Hold it, McGee. Here comes Mr. Wimple.
Huh? Who? Oh, hi, Wimp, old man.
Hello, folks.
Out for a little walk, Mr. Wimple?
Yes, I'm just seeking inspiration, Mrs. McGee. I find that walking helps me think.
Inspiration for what, Wimp?
Poetry, Mr. McGee.
Oh.
I have an order for some greeting cards, and I have to write them tonight. I think I have a good one for Mother's Day.
Oh, I'd love to hear it, Mr. Wimple. How does it go?
It goes, "Mama, dear Mama, this is your day. So drop your work, come out and play. Hear the children sing good wishes. Then go back and do the dishes."
That's more truth than poetry, Wimp. Not that it's much of either one.
Have you any others, Mr. Wimple?
Well, I was working on one for a friend that's sick in the hospital. Sort of a sympathy card.
Oh, I bet this one will have him in stitches. Read it, Wimp.
It goes, "To a friend who is sick. I'm sorry you are sick, my friend. I'm sorry you are ill. In a place where they wake you up at 4 to give you a sleeping pill. I hope you have a lovely nurse to help when fever starts to boil you. And if you have, move over, kid, because I'll be right down there to join you." Well, I'll see you later, folks.
Dry cleaning place, Molly. Now, you let me do the talking.
Oh, I know better than to try and stop you, dearie. But now be reasonable.
What do you mean, be reasonable? With guys that deliberately stole my fountain pen? Come on.
Yes, sir? What can I do for you, sir?
You picked up a blue serge suit at my house this morning, Bud.
Yes?
And my husband thinks he left his fountain pen in it.
I know darn well I left my fountain pen in it. I always have my pen in that blue serge suit. Now, look, Buster, I want that fountain pen back, or by George...
Oh, now, just a moment, sir. Give us a chance to investigate. I can tell you immediately if your pen has been found. What was the name, please?
Parker.
Your address, Mrs. Parker?
The name is McGee, Bud.
Oh, well, which of you is making the complaint? Mr. McGee or Mrs. Parker?
I am Mrs. McGee. The pen's name was Parker.
It was a solid, gold-pointed, kind of greenish pen that was given to me by a Fred Nittany from Starved Rock, Illinois. Old partner of mine in vaudeville.
Actors. Do you have an address?
79 Whistler Vista.
Oh, yes, I remember. You've been our customers for many years. Of course, that would be Driver Crylby in Route 3. Oh, Miss Fregelhorn.
Yes, Mr. Houghton-Trout.
Was there a fountain pen in a suit from 79 Wistful Vista, Route 3?
No, Mr. Houghton-Trout. Two papers and matches, some pool chalk, a nail file, a rabbit's foot, and a ticket stub for the World Series of 1932. They're in the mail.
Thank you, Miss Fregelhorn. No, I'm sorry, Mr. McGee, but...
But you ain't half as sorry as you're going to be. By George, when a man trusts a business institution like this to be honest and then has him walk out with a solid gold-pointed fountain pen that was given to him by Fred Nittany...
Now, wait a minute, McGee.
I'm sure, Mr. McGee.
You're sure? You ain't as sure as I am, Buster. I'll bet you got that whole back room there stacked to the ceiling with stolen fountain pens. Deliberately walking into people's homes and taking suits full of fountain pens. That's larceny, Bud. And by George,
May I ask one question, Mr. McGee?
Certainly, Mr. Houghton-Trout.
And make it snappy, Bud. One question. What is it?
How would you like a good poke in the nose?
Oh, my goodness.
Oh. Not only a burglar, but a tough guy, eh? Come out from behind that counter, Buster, and I'll fix you up a knuckle sandwich. Nobody can talk to me
now,
like
that. Now, stop it, both of you. Mr. Houghton-Trout, what is the procedure when somebody thinks you have something and you think you have it?
The proper procedure is to make out a claim blank.
Well, give us one, please.
Certainly. Here you are.
I don't want to make out a claim. I want to bust this fresh guy right in the freezer.
Fill it out, dearie.
Okay. Where's the pencil?
They have to be filled out in ink, Mr. McGee. Here, use my pen.
I don't want any favors from you, Cy. I'll use my own pen. Now then. Name and address. Describe the lost article. Approximate value.
McGee?
Huh?
Where'd you get that pen you're using?
This pen? Well, this was given to me by Fred Nittany from Starved Rock. Well, imagine that, right in this coat all the time.
Go on, apologize to Mr. Houghton-Trout, dearie.
Sure. I'm sorry, Houghton-Trout, old man.
Quite all right, Mr. McGee. Shall I tear up the claim blank?
Oh, no, I might as well finish it out. Bound to lose this pen sometime. Same circumstances on the hooks article.
Oh, this is ridiculous.
No one likes to do jobs that aren't necessary, least of all now when everybody has to do his or her work. And yet, we have to take even better care of our things than we did before. What's the answer? Well, as far as your kitchen and other linoleum floors are concerned, it's Johnson's Glow Coat. Glow Coat does save you unnecessary work, and it does preserve your linoleum. Its regular use makes linoleum surfaces last 6 to 10 times longer. Can you ask more than that with work-saving in the bargain? Glow Coat is self-polishing and needs no rubbing or buffing. Its application is the simplest thing in the world. You just apply and let dry. Come back in 20 minutes to find your floors shining with beauty. Colors as fresh as when you first picked out the pattern in your dealer's showroom. Also, if you have floors of asphalt or rubber tile, Johnson's Glow Coat is the polish you should use. This is Harlow Wilcox, speaking for the makers of Johnson Wax Finishes for Home and Industry, inviting you to be with us again next Tuesday night. Good night.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.
It's time for My Favorite Husband, starring Lucille Ball.
Hello, everybody.
Yes.
Yes, it's the Gay Family series starring Lucille Ball with Richard Denning. Transcribed and brought to you by the Jell-O family of Red Letter Desserts.
Oh, the big red letters stand for the Jell-O family. Oh, the big red letters stand for the Jell-O family. That's Jell-O.
Yum, yum, yum.
Jell-O pudding.
Yum, yum, yum.
Jell-O tap. Feel the pudding just furry.
And now Lucille Ball with Richard Denning as Liz and George Cooper. Two people who live together and like it. As we look in on the Coopers, it's morning and we find Liz Cooper in the living room. Katie the maid has just brought in the mail.
Here you are, Mrs. Cooper. Here's the morning mail.
Oh, thanks, Katie.
Ooh, good. There's a big stack of it. Let's see now. One for George and one for George and one for George. One for George.
Oh, don't feel bad, Mrs. Cooper. I'll write you a letter.
Wouldn't do any good. The postmaster doesn't like me. If I don't get some mail pretty soon, I'm going to take from another company.
Oh, Mrs. Cooper.
Anyway, George got enough for both of us. Look at this letter, Katie. From his college. Oh, I hope it isn't another meeting of the Pep and Rally Committee. He's still on that, you know.
Isn't Mr. Cooper rather old for that sort of stuff?
Old? Why, Katie, George is young, vibrant. That's what I love about him. He stays so healthy and strong and young.
Yes, Mrs. Cooper.
Oh, my goodness.
What's the matter?
This letter for George. Look, it's from the War Department. Why would they be writing to George?
Do you suppose he's been drafted?
Drafted? What do they want with an old man like him?
I don't know.
The flap certainly stuck tight. Wait a minute. I think if I scrunch up the envelope, I can peek in through the little window in the front.
Is that ethical?
Certainly. They put the window there, didn't they? If they didn't want people to peek in, they would have put a shade on it.
That makes sense.
Now, let's see. Well, the government is certainly late with their Christmas cards.
Christmas cards?
It must be. I can only see the first word, but it says greetings.
You better scrunch a few more words out, Mrs. Cooper.
Okay. You are requested to report to local draft board number 8, Wednesday morning at 8 o'clock. Katie, George is being drafted.
Oh, dear, this is terrible.
Well, that's the thanks you get for doing a good job.
Good job.
Yes, George won the last war for them. Now they want him to do it all over again.
Mr. Atterbury, could I see you a moment?
George, boy, certainly. Come in. Now, what is it?
I wonder if I could have a day off next week.
What?
Well, it's pretty important, or I wouldn't ask. I have to go down to the draft board.
George Boy! Congratulations! I'm proud of you. One of our boys going into the service. And I was just going to give you a raise, too. Well, don't you worry. We'll hold your job for you. Here, have a cigar.
Thanks, Mr. Atterbury. But you don't understand. I'm just filling in on the draft board for a friend of mine, Dave Janis.
Oh, you're not being drafted?
Oh, I'm just serving on the board.
Give me back the cigar.
Well, it's sure nice to know you're going to give me a raise.
Raise?
I was afraid of that.
But understand, boy, you can still have your job back.
Oh, thanks. I'll only be gone a day.
Well, it's all right. You can work on the next holiday and make it up.
Well, I don't know yet what day I'm supposed to serve. I should have a letter at home telling me when.
Well, boy, actually, you're doing a great service. It's important to serve on the draft board. I did it during the last war, you know. And incidentally, let me give you a word of advice.
Yes, sir?
Don't tell Liz what you're doing.
Why not?
Well, I made the mistake of telling Iris when I was on the board. All the women in her bridge club were on my neck.
Women?
Yes, they gave me the choice of stationing their sons near home or making them four-star generals.
Say, I never thought of that. Well, I won't mention a word to Liz.
Good, good. Oh, and boy, I'm sorry I was a little brusque a moment ago about what I promised you. You can have it.
The raise?
No, the cigar.
Girl.
Hi, Iris. Come in.
Well, what's the big news you were going to tell me?
Iris, George has been... Huh? George has been...
try it once more.
George has been...
Oh, that's what he's been, all right.
George has been drafted.
Drafted? George who?
My George.
Oh, now, Liz, calm down. When did you find it out?
The letter just came this morning.
Well, what does George think about it?
He doesn't know it yet. I scrunched up the envelope and looked in through the little window in the front.
Oh. Liz, I don't understand. Why should they take George?
I don't know. But they'll probably take him right away, and I won't see him for years and years. And I'll be home waiting and waiting all alone. Well, now, don't you cry, Iris. You've got to help me be brave.
I was just thinking about Rudolph.
They won't take him.
I know, that's why I'm crying. Oh, I don't mean that. I'm so upset, I don't know what I'm saying.
Iris. Iris, we mustn't cry like this. Here, here's a clean hanky.
Thanks. You're right, girl. Crying doesn't help.
We've got to be brave. It's up to women to be strong in a moment of crisis.
Atta girl, girl. No more tears.
No more tears.
We won't even think about it.
No. What's new, Iris?
Nothing. What's new with you?
Nothing. Katie, here comes our little soldier up the walk. Are you ready to show him how much we appreciate him?
All ready.
Hi, everybody.
Hi, George, you big, adorable husband, you.
Hi, Mr. Cooper, you big, wonderful boss, you.
Give me a kiss.
Me too.
What?
I mean, give me your hat.
Well, what brought this on?
Nothing. We're just glad to see you, that's all. Come on in the living room.
Your
easy chair is just waiting for you.
Well, but I am...
Now, sit down and get cozy, George. Here's your pipe.
And here's your slippers.
Well, thanks, but you see,
and here's the evening paper.
And here's your smoking jacket. Now, first the left arm,
well, but Liz,
now,
but...
the right arm.
But Katie...
There. Now, do you need anything else to make you comfortable, darling?
Yes. I'd like to get up and take off my overcoat.
Oh, sorry.
What's going on around here anyway?
Why, nothing, George. Katie and I just want to make you happy, that's all.
Well, okay, but something tells me this is going to cost me money. Was there any mail?
Yes, dear. It's right there on the table.
I'll go put dinner on.
Bill.
Uh-huh. Well, George?
Well, what?
Finish reading your mail?
Yes.
Well?
Well, what?
Was it interesting?
Fairly.
Well?
Well, what?
Honey, is there something on your mind?
No, I'll go help Katie with dinner.
How's he taking it, Mrs. Cooper?
Katie, you know what he's doing. He's keeping it from me. He's sparing me until the last possible moment.
Wouldn't you know Mr. Cooper would act like that?
Bless his brave little heart. If he can keep a stiff upper lip, so can I.
Come on, George. Dinner's ready.
Good. I'm starved. Smells wonderful. What are we having?
Turkey and dressing and candied sweet potatoes.
Gosh, that's my favorite meal.
Yes, dear.
You know, Liz, the way you run this house, it's a pleasure to come home every night.
Every night?
Yes, sir. What's for dessert?
Jell-O!
Hey, Liz, come back here. What's the matter?
As we look in on the Coopers once again, Liz mistakenly thinks George has been drafted and is trying to be brave about the whole thing. Well, all she's succeeded in doing so far is completely confusing George, as Mr. Atterbury is finding out.
George, boy, may I talk to you a minute?
Oh, certainly. Come on in, Mr. Hathaway.
George.
Oh, Mr. Atterbury.
That's right. Atterbury. You may recall me. I've been your boss for 10 years.
Oh, I'm sorry, sir. I've been a little vague all day.
A little vague? Boy, that's what I want to talk to you about. Here, can you identify this?
My lunch? I wondered where that had gone.
Oh, it's all right, George. We found it. In the filing cabinet.
Oh, gee, that was stupid of me.
Well, I'll say this, boy. You aren't completely gone. It was filed under L. There is something that puzzles me, however.
You know, what's that?
How did the Lloyd account taste?
I didn't.
No. We found it in your lunchbox.
How do you like that?
Not very well, and I'd like an explanation. Now, watch this sudden lapse, boy.
Well, to tell you the truth, sir, I'm worried about Liz.
What's Miss Tanglefoot done now?
That's just it. I don't know. Last night, when I went home, Liz wasn't herself.
And you're complaining?
Oh, you don't understand. First, she was happy, and then, just a few minutes later, for no reason at all, she started to cry.
Crying for no reason at all, eh?
Yeah. And then, later on in the evening, she was singing and making jokes, and, well, and the next minute, she burst into tears. I don't get it.
Don't you? I do. Pop. What? Get it, boy? You're going to be a father.
Me? Father?
Well, of course. That's it. Liz is going to have a baby. Women always act like that.
Me? Father?
Yes. Congratulations, boy.
Me? Father?
Yes. You, father, Liz, mother, me, Tarzan.
I can't get over it. I'm going to be a father. Oh, Liz is going to be a mother.
It does, unless things have changed lately.
Oh, gee, it's hard to believe. Do you really think that's why Liz has been acting so funny?
Take my word for it, boy. That's undoubtedly the reason.
I wonder what it'll be.
Well, it's just a wild guess, but it will probably be a baby.
Gee, I wonder why Liz hasn't told me.
Well, women are funny about those things, George. Now, whatever you do, don't let on you suspect. Let her break the news when she wants to. She'll probably play coy and let you catch her knitting little thing.
Gee, I'd better sit down. I feel kind of weak.
Oh, no wonder you haven't had any lunch.
Yeah, that's right. I'd better eat and keep up my strength. After all, I'm eating for two now.
Mr.
Mrs. Cooper, Mrs. Atterbury's here.
Oh, hi, Iris. Come on in.
Well, girl, has George told you he's going into the army yet?
Not a word. Sometimes I think he doesn't plan to tell me at all.
Doesn't he think you'll get suspicious after he's gone 2 or 3 months?
Well, it's just that he hates to hurt me. Wonderful, George.
Yeah. What are you doing, knitting?
Yes, I thought he should have some nice warm socks to wear in the army. Do you think these will fit, George?
Hold them up. Aren't his feet the same size?
Darn it. I thought the left sock was going faster. Well, I'll have to rip the foot out.
Well, I better run along and let you finish them.
Yeah, I have to get them finished before George gets home. He gets drafted tomorrow morning, and I can't let him see me knitting these. He doesn't suspect that I know.
Yeah, well, I'll let myself out. See you tonight for canasta.
Yeah, I hope George has told me by then. Then we can all talk about it.
Oh, look, I've been dying to tell Rudolph.
Don't you dare.
Well, it... so long, girl.
Happy knitting. Knit one. Purl one. Knit one. Purl two. Oops. Drop one. Iris, did you forget something?
No, honey, it's me. Iris just left.
George, don't come in. Hello.
What's the matter with you, Liz?
Nothing.
Nothing, huh? Come on, now, what are you holding behind your back?
Behind my back? Nothing.
It looks like knitting needles to me.
It does?
Yeah. Let me see.
No, I am knitting something, George, but it's kind of a surprise.
All right, honey. Don't you show it to me until you get good and ready. I'll get it.
No, I'll get it.
Oh, but you have to save your strength.
No, you have to save your strength. Well, somebody should get it.
I will. You just sit right there, Mother.
Well, you don't have to get nasty about it.
I'll be right back. Hello?
Well, boy.
You were right.
Did she tell you, boy?
Well, not yet, but when I came home, she was knitting.
Old tiny garments.
Yes, she wouldn't let me see them, but I know that's what they were.
Do you suppose she'll tell us tonight when we come over to play canasta?
Oh, probably, but you know how women are. They like to break the news themselves, so don't tell Iris.
Don't worry. For once in my life, I know a juicy morsel before she does. I'm not likely to tell Big Ears.
Good, I'll see you tonight.
Fine. Goodbye, Dad.
I'll get it, honey.
No, I'll get it. It's probably the Atterbury.
I'll get it. You stay right there in that chair.
Well, all right. I can't go anyway. You haven't let me move for 2 hours. My foot's asleep. I'll try to wake it up.
George boy, Liz girl.
Liz girl, George boy.
Come on in.
Well, how's everything?
Liz!
What?
You shouldn't be jumping up and down like that.
I should say not. Stop it.
Why?
Well, because you...
Well, what would you do if you were in my condition?
Don't try to answer that, George.
There. That's better. It's awake now.
What is?
My foot. It went to sleep.
Oh, foot! Asleep! Oh, yes, of course.
Listen, has he said anything yet?
Not a word.
What are you two whispering about?
Oh, nothing.
George boy, she told you yet?
No, not yet.
What are you two whispering about?
Yeah.
Oh, nothing.
Look, group. fellow whisperers, I have a feeling that there is someone in this room who has something to tell the rest of us. Now, why not come out with it?
Good idea.
Fine.
Yeah, come on.
Oh, come now. We're all friends. Out with it. There's no need to hide things any longer.
Yeah, of course not.
No.
Let's have it.
Look. Look. I'll start the ball rolling. Liz, do you know when it's going to be?
Well, I don't know why you ask me, but... Yes, I know.
When's it going to be?
Tomorrow morning.
You're...
Tomorrow morning?
Oh, Liz, sit down. You have to rest, dear.
Liz? Huh? Liz, why don't you give him the socks now?
All right. George, I have a little surprise for you. Here. I knitted them myself. How do you like them?
Oh, fine, dear. A swell.
What are they?
Oh, George, anyone can see what they are.
Sure.
They're two little pullover sweaters with hoods.
Oh.
Two? Oh, why two, Liz?
Well, George, after all, that's the normal number. Yes, I thought you'd look pretty silly walking around with one. Maybe you'd like three?
No, no, two will be fine. Oh,
George, George, I only want to say one thing. I'm proud of you.
So am I.
Oh, tomorrow's going to be the happiest day of my life.
What? Are you glad?
Well, certainly I'm glad, aren't you?
I should say not. I'm mad. You know who's to blame for the whole thing, don't you?
What? Well, who?
Those darn Chinese communists.
What are you talking about, Liz?
I'm talking about your being drafted. What do you think I'm talking about?
Drafted? Well, aren't you having a baby?
A baby? Of course not.
Well, I'm not being drafted either. Dave Janis is away, and I'm just taking his place on the draft board.
Well, that's a fine thing, deceiving me like that.
Deceiving you? I didn't... How'd you know about it anyway?
I peeked in the letter from the draft board.
Well, that's what you get for being Snoopy.
Snoopy? George Cooper, as far as I'm concerned, you can go into the Army.
What?
And it wouldn't surprise me if you did either. It'd be just like you to run away and join the Army and leave me with our only child.
You have been listening to My Favorite Husband, starring Lucille Ball with Richard Denning, and based on characters created by Isabel Scott Rorick. Tonight's transcribed program was produced and directed by Jess Oppenheimer, who wrote the script with Madeline Pugh and Bob Carroll Jr. Original music was composed by Marlon Skiles and conducted by Wilbur Hatch. Mr. and Mrs. Atterbury were played by Gail Gordon and B. Benaderet. The part of Katie the Maid was played by Ruth Parrott. Be sure to watch for Lucille Ball as a would-be cosmetic dealer in her latest Columbia picture, The Fuller Brush Girl. Bob Lamond speaking.
Colgate Dental Cream to clean your breath while you clean your teeth and help stop tooth decay, and Palmolive Shave Creams for a smoother, more comfortable way to shave bring you Our Miss Brooks, starring Eve Arden.
Time once again for another comedy episode of Our Miss Brooks, under the direction of Al Lewis. Well, in many of these United States, winter seems to have settled down for a protracted stay. Our Miss Brooks, who teaches English at Madison High School, doesn't seem to mind.
No, indeed. I do enjoy the winter season. There are so many activities to engage in. Ice skating, sleigh riding, building snowmen. Of course, the last snowman I built melted after one dance, but while we're on the... subject of snowmen, I was speaking to my landlady just last Friday morning about one Philip Boynton. It seems the bashful biologist had come out of his turtleneck sweater long enough to invite me to Madison's annual matinee snowball dance.
That's wonderful, Connie. And I just know you'll be the belle of the ball this afternoon. That outfit is so colorful and wintry looking, especially those lovely blue socks.
I haven't put on my socks yet. Maybe we ought to turn the heat up, Mrs. Davis.
Of course, dear. But I am crazy about that sweater. And the earrings are divine, even though they are a bit large.
These are not earrings, Mrs. Davis. They happen to be earmuffs. I'm just wearing them a little lower than usual. You see, I have what is known in medical circles as cold lobes.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, it's nothing to worry about. I just don't want my blue feet to get jealous. I'll put my socks and shoes on right now. I brought them in with me.
Yes, you better get ready, Connie. Walter Denton will be here to pick you up any minute. But while we're waiting, you still haven't told me how you got Mr. Boynton to ask you to the dance.
It wasn't easy, Mrs. Davis. I started my campaign weeks ago. First of all, I played hard to get for 2 days.
And then?
And then I played Available Jones for 3. After that, I changed my lipstick 4 times and used 6 different brands of perfume in as many days.
And then?
Then I bought 2 tickets to the dance and invited him. But it should be fun. Oh, that's Walter now. Coming, Walter! See you tonight, Mrs. Davis. Good morning, Walter.
Greetings, good fairy of wintertime. Your warmth and beauty bring cheery comfort to this frigid, icicle-ridden chariot.
Careful, Walter. You're fogging up the windshield.
Your outfit's a knockout, Miss Brooks. Something new's been added, hasn't it?
What do you mean?
Those large woolen earrings.
These are earmuffs. Cold lobes. Open your door.
Yes, ma'am. I think it only fair to call it to your attention, Miss Brooks, but you may not be so comfortable on your way to school today. You see, I...
Ouch!
...brought my skis with me.
If you hadn't called it to my attention, I never would have noticed them.
Anything broken?
No. Fortunately, this woolen skirt doesn't splinter easily.
Well, let's get going.
Why don't you put these skis in the back of the car, Walter?
Oh, it's not big enough.
Oh.
Just hold them on your lap, Miss Brooks.
That's not big enough either. Here, I'll stand them up on the floor between us. Oh, no, that won't work. You've got the top on today.
Oh, just stick them through the hole in the top.
What hole?
Grab the wheel a minute. I'll show you. That hole right there.
Perfect fit. But what is this metal contraption in the center of the skis, Walter?
Oh, that is my own invention, Miss Brooks. I call it the Denton Claw. It's guaranteed to keep your skis on no matter what.
Really?
Yes, not only that, but it's designed to keep your skis in perfect position regardless of what you're doing with your feet.
Suppose you're crushing grapes.
Matter, Miss Brooks. Oh, this is a great contraption. I'm going to try it out this afternoon on the big hill back of school.
But aren't you going to the snowball dance in the gym today?
Oh, sure. Yeah, but a bunch of us kids are going to go skiing for an hour before the dance. Say, maybe you'd like to come along, Miss Brooks.
Not me, Walter. I've never been on a pair of skis, and I'm perfectly contented to keep it that way.
You don't know what you're missing, Miss Brooks. There's nothing like sailing down those snowy slopes and taking a crack at some Christies and stems.
There'll be no Christies on my stems.
But it's a wonderful sport, and the exercise is great for you. Ah, you ought to see those kids after a half hour on that ski run. Their eyes are glowing, and their faces are red and tingling.
And that's not all.
Well,
their noses are red, too. Yep, that's all I'd need. Why, with my blue earlobes and a red nose, I'd look like somebody stuck a flag in the snow. Good morning, Mr. Boynton. All set for the dance this afternoon?
Oh, yes, indeed, Miss Brooks. I see you're all ready for it, too. It's a very interesting outfit you're wearing. I'm especially fond of that winter gypsy motif.
Winter gypsy motif?
Yes, those large woolen earrings.
Earmuffs, cold lobes. We've got a few minutes before class, Mr. Boynton. Do you mind if I sit down for a little chat? Well,
not at all, but be careful where you sit. I brought...
Ouch!
...my skis to school today.
Thanks, Mr. Boynton. That's a very good tip. The second one I received today. Here, stand them in a corner.
All right. You see, there's going to be a little time before the dance begins, so I thought I'd go over to the big hill behind school this afternoon and do a little sheeing.
A little what?
Sheeing. Oh, there are other pronunciations, I suppose, but in England and Norway, sheeing is considered most acceptable.
Under the proper conditions, you can't knock it anywhere.
By the way, Miss Brooks, are you interested in the sport?
Oh, quite a bit, Mr. Boynton. Except that I've always called it heeing. I've always called it skiing.
Well, skiing or sheeing, I'm going out on the hill after school. Would you like to come along with me?
Certainly. Certainly. If there's one thing I'm just crazy to do, it's to sail down that snowy expanse and try out my Christies and Stemmies. Of course, I haven't had much of an opportunity to ski since coming to Madison, but I know it'll all come back to me in a flash. Oh, I see you've got the poles that help you keep your balance. Just what do you call those poles, Mr. Boynton?
Just poles.
And what about those metal discs near the bottom? What are they called?
They're just called metal discs.
I've got this thing down pat, haven't I? Well, if you'll excuse me now, I'm going to dig up a pair of skis for this afternoon. I don't have a pair of my own.
Well, I don't have any extra ones. Do you think you can borrow some, Miss Brooks?
Don't worry, Mr. Boynton. I'll be out on that hill with you this afternoon if I have to get a long splinter in each foot. So you see, Walter, that's why I asked you to stay after class. You've just got to lend me those skis today.
Yeah, but Miss Brooks, I spent my whole study period polishing them up. I mean, I haven't even tried these out myself yet.
But Walter, I was looking for you, Walter. Oh, hi, Miss Brooks.
Hello, Harriet.
Hi, Harriet.
Well, what's wrong? You two having a beef?
Not a whole beef, Harriet, just a small fillet. I'm trying to convince him to lend me his skis, just for this afternoon. Mr. Boynton's going to give me a refresher course.
Refresher course? But you said you never skied in your life.
That should make it all the more refreshing.
Of course Walter'll lend them to you, Miss Brooks.
But, Harriet, we were going out to the hill and...
The hill won't disappear, Walter, neither will the snow. We'll get to the dance earlier this way.
Yeah, but...
Walter, dear... Which is more romantic, racing up and down a hill on a pair of sticks, or holding me close in your arms doing the mambo jumbo?
The skis are yours, Miss Brooks.
Good. Now show me how to put these things on, so I'll look like I practically know what I'm doing this afternoon.
Okay, Miss Brooks. So with the new Denton claw, it's relatively simple. Now just slip your feet through these metal toe plates. That's right. Now we just snap this cable around your heel.
Is this your new invention, Walter?
This is it, Harriet. Now the other cable. There. How do they feel?
Real cozy. I'll just take a few steps and see if I can remain standing. They feel all right to me. Now help me get them off, Walter. I've got another class in a few minutes.
Oh, here. Sit down, Miss Brooks.
Thanks, Harriet.
Now, we just grab the binding here. Hold the cable thusly and give it a gentle tug and presto. That's funny. I'll try it again. Take hold of the binding here,
give the cable a yank here, and presto. Once again, presto.
So well, you better try abacadabra.
These tables seem to be stuck.
Let's see. Oh, now I remember. Oh, when I had the whole thing worked out and assembled, I remembered leaving myself a notation about one detail that had to be perfected.
What's that?
The way to get them off.
You mean you can't get them off Miss Brooks' feet?
Now, calm down, everybody. Don't get panicky. We'll get them off by and by.
By and by?
Look, Walter, while we're waiting for by and by to get here, there's something you've just got to do so I won't appear ridiculous in this classroom.
What's that, Miss Brooks?
Cut a hole in the roof and let some snow in.
Brush your teeth with Colgate. Colgate Dental Cream, it cleans your breath.
What a toothpaste.
Why, it cleans your teeth.
Colgate Toothpaste.
Cleans your breath.
What a toothpaste.
Why, it cleans your teeth.
Colgate Dental Cream cleans your breath while it cleans your teeth. And the Colgate way stops tooth decay best. Yes, the Colgate way is the most thoroughly proved and accepted home method of oral hygiene known today. Over 2 years' research showed brushing teeth right after eating with Colgate Dental Cream helps stop more decay for more people than ever before reported in dentifrice history. The Colgate way stops tooth decay best. No other dentifrice, ammoniated or not, offers such conclusive proof. And you should know that Colgate's, while not mentioned by name, was the only toothpaste used in the research on tooth decay recently reported in Reader's Digest. So always follow the Colgate way to clean your breath while you clean your teeth and stop tooth decay best.
Brush your teeth with Colgate. Colgate Dental Cream, it cleans your breath.
What a toothpaste.
What a cleans your teeth.
And the Colgate way stops tooth decay best.
Well, the American teacher has been called upon to face many a crisis, and I refuse to let the fact that my ankles were locked to a pair of skis by the Denton claw faze me one bit. When it came time for me to conduct my class, I merely smiled, rose from my desk, and with my customary dignity and poise, stepped lightly to the blackboard. Quiet, class. Well, attention, all of you. What's the matter with you kids, anyhow? Don't you think it's cold enough in this room for skis? Now, look at the blackboard, please. In order to find the adjunct phrase in the sentence on the board, I shall break it down into its component parts. Now, where's that chalk? Oh, I have some on my desk. One moment, class. Here it is.
Miss Brooks, I gotta talk to you for a minute. I've got good news.
Kindly pick up your books, class. Yes, Harris?
What do you want us to do with our books, Miss Brooks?
I want you to put your noses in them. Also your mouths.
I couldn't leave you here marooned in this predicament, Miss Brooks. So guess what I brought for you.
St. Bernard with a keg of arsenic?
No, I borrowed a hacksaw from a machine shop. I'll get those skis off you in no time.
Now?
Sure. While the class is busy reading, I'll just slide under your desk, leap at your imprisoned puppies, and hack away.
Well, it's as good a time as any, I guess. But be careful with that saw, Walter. Remember, my ankle bone is connected to the shin bone.
Here I go, Miss Brooks. I've got to get these leather thongs first. They're even tougher than the wire cable. I'll work as fast as I can, though. I'd hate for Mr. Conklin to catch it with these slacks on.
Oh, that's a charming thought. Especially when I recall what a bug our beloved principal is on the personal appearance of the faculty. All that has to happen now...
At ease, class.
It happens. Mr. Conklin.
Don't bother to get up, Miss Brooks.
Don't worry. I mean, this is quite a surprise, sir. I didn't expect you in my room this morning. Ouch!
Does my visit pain you so severely, Miss Brooks?
Oh, no, sir. On the contrary. Every time I see your smiling face, I... Ouch! Forgive me, Mr. Thompson, a bit of a headache.
You certainly are. But, Miss Brooks, if I may...
Of course you may, Mr. Conklin. You may return to this classroom any time you wish. Well, goodbye. It's been nice to have seen... Oops!
Oh, you dropped your chalk under your desk, Miss Brooks. Let me get it for you.
No, thank you. I've already got it. See?
Amazing. It fell to the floor, and you got it without even bending over.
My foot handed it to me. My hand footed it to... I've got it, see?
I don't know what's wrong with you this morning, Miss Brooks, but I came in to address your class, and with your permission, I'll do so.
Permission granted, sir. Very granted. Go right ahead, Mr. Conklin.
Thank you. Now then, most of you are aware of the fact that by dint of much argument and persuasion, I recently prevailed upon the Board of Education to appropriate $1,000 for the purpose of re-sanding and completely refinishing the floors throughout this building and in our gymnasium. This work has been done and done well. Yet only moments ago in the hallway, in flagrant violation of my posted notice to preserve the school floors, I discovered the soggy prints of a pair of skis. Something in your throat, Miss Brooks?
Just my heart. Please continue, Mr. Carson.
Well, I don't like to have to resort to these methods, but I must ask all you students to swing your feet into the aisles, and I will pass among you to inspect them. I'll take this row first. I don't know.
Now, quiet, class. Whatever you do, don't talk.
This file isn't very sharp, Miss Brooks.
And for heaven's sake, start biting, Walter.
I'll do my best. I'm not down here playing this little piggy, you know.
Stop talking and gnaw.
The guilty one doesn't seem to be in this class, Miss Brooks. Have you looked in the cloakroom?
Believe me, the skis aren't in the cloakroom, sir. I wish they were, but they're not. That is, if you have to go back to your office now...
You'll have another class coming in shortly, Miss Brooks. I'll wait for them. Meanwhile, carry on with this one.
But it's quite a boring lesson today, Mr. Conklin. You see, I was about to tell my class which is the adjunct phrase on the blackboard.
Well, now, don't merely tell them, Miss Brooks. They'll retain it much better if you go to the blackboard and check it off.
Go to the blackboard?
Yes, Miss Brooks. And at one?
At one?
Yes, Miss Brooks. Now, march!
Very well. There, the phrase is checked off.
Well, that's more like it. And I must say, you walk very gracefully in those skis you're wearing. But now that you've checked off the adjunct phrase, Miss Brooks, it seems to me that you ought to discuss all the component parts of the sentence, such as prepositions, adjectives, verbs, those skis you're wearing!
Skis, sir? What skis?
I am waiting, Miss Brooks. Drag those warped planks out from under that desk of yours and bring them here.
But, Mr. Conklin, Ouch! I can't imagine.
I am waiting, Miss Brooks.
Very well, sir. Here I am. See, I'm not wearing skis.
No, you're not. But would you mind telling me, nature girl, why you're conducting this class in your bare feet?
Oh, I'm just trying to preserve the floors, Mr. Conklin. I just kicked my shoes off under the desk.
I'll just have a look under that desk.
But there's nothing down there but shoes.
Out of my way, I'll look for myself.
Miss Brooks is right. There's nothing down here but us shoes.
Just as I suspected. Walter Denton, a hacksaw, and the skis.
It's the old eternal triangle. Carry the skis, Walter.
I'll deal with you both in my office after school. And now, Miss Brooks, hand those skis over to me.
Here you are, Mr. Conklin.
You seem to have broken my glasses, Miss Brooks.
Please, Mr. Conklin, you know I didn't mean it.
You never do. You know, Miss Brooks, for most people, skis are synonymous with helpful, invigorating exercise. But in your position, somehow they become a lethal weapon. I never want to see a pair on or near you again. Is that clear?
Yes, sir. But about your glasses,
and knowing I might make contact with you today, I brought my extra pair along. If you just step back a pace or two, I'll slip them on. Ah, there. Now, if you'll be good enough to reach back and hand me the other ski.
The other one?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yes. Here you are. Oh, what have I done? Oh, I'm terribly upset, Mr. Conklin.
You must be. You only broke a window this time. Not very good aim for you. I still have my glasses.
Yes, sir. And I still have the tea you asked for. Here it is, Mr. Conklin.
Good shot, girl.
The summit of the old ski hill is just up ahead, Miss Brooks. I wish we could have started earlier. It's getting pretty nippy out.
The delay was unavoidable, Mr. Boynton. Right after school, Mr. Conklin summoned Walter Denton and me to a meeting in his office. You know how strict he is about parliamentary procedure.
Oh, yes, I do.
We had the floor for over an hour.
You and Walter?
Yes, he waxed and I polished. But that's all behind us now.
Yes, let's forget about school and discipline. Well, this is the summit. We'll take off from here.
You'll take off from here. I'm just a spectator. I don't even have any skis.
Oh, I know, but we'll share mine. Ladies first, Miss Brooks. Here, I'll slip them on for you.
Oh, no, please. I wouldn't think of it.
Well, nonsense. Give me your right foot first, Miss Brooks.
No, Mr. Boynton.
Now, just lean down, lay your head close to mine, and put your arms around my shoulders.
Well, if you're going to bribe me...
There. There's one. And there's the other. All set to take off, Miss Brooks.
Wait. It looks much different from the top than it did from below.
Yee-haw, Mr. Boynton!
Boy, it's Mr. Conklin.
Oh, no, I've got to work fast.
Yee-haw, Mr. Conklin!
Why are you covering your skis with snow, Miss Brooks?
I'll explain later, Mr. Boynton. They're pretty well hidden now.
Ah, hello, Boynton. What a delightful winter's day.
Hello, Mr. Conklin.
Turned pretty raw, didn't it? Well, Miss Brooks, how have you been behaving yourself since I saw you last 2 pairs of glasses ago?
Just fine, Mr. Conklin.
Well, I notice you don't have your skis on, Mr. Conklin. Aren't you going to take advantage of the snow today?
Me? Get on a pair of skis with my blood pressure? No, thank you. I just came up to look at the scenery and get a breath of fresh air before plunging into the fetid atmosphere of that dance in the gym.
You make it sound like fun.
Oh, the view's lovely from here, all right. But you'll have to step a bit closer to the edge of the hill, Mr. Conklin, if you really want to get a bird's eye view.
That, Mr. Boynton, is for the bird. I'll just stand here behind Miss Brooks and take a peek over her shoulder. Yes, it looks like a terrifying descent.
Oh, there's nothing to it, sir. Now, watch how Miss Brooks sails down. I'll just give you a flying start, Miss Brooks.
Mr. Boynton, wait, please.
Here you go.
Oh, no! Where did that wind come from?
You're doing fine, Miss Brooks. Just watch out for those rocks.
Rocks? Where are the brakes on these things?
You're clear now. Steady, Miss Brooks. Slow down a bit. Slow down. You're going too fast.
I can't slow down.
Bear left, Miss Brooks. Past that gully. Look out. You're heading right for that big tree. Look out for that tree.
It's the only way I can stop. Oh, if I can just grab one of the branches. Here goes. Ooh. Oh. Thank heaven. What an experience.
Mind if I get off now? None other.
Hitchhiker. That is, the wind was blowing.
Oh, stop mumbling, woman. And explain, if you can, this dastardly act of violence.
It wasn't intentional, sir. I had no way of knowing you were in the caboose. That is, well, sir, if you want the truth, I did know there was something in back of me.
You did?
Certainly. But the way I was stooped over, I thought it was me.
Thank you. Eve Arden as our Miss Brooks returns in just a moment, but first...
You get smoother, more comfortable, comfortable shave by shaving the Palm Olive Brush this way. Get smoother, more comfortable, comfortable shave the Palm Olive Brush this way.
Hey, that's a fact, men. You can get smoother, yes, more comfortable shaves the Palm Olive Brushless Shaving Cream way. Just rub velvet smooth Palm Olive Brushless into your beard. You'll find it wilts the toughest whiskers, actually protects your skin by providing a soft film that floats your razor's cutting edge. Remember, over 1,200 men tested the Palm Olive Brushless Shaving Cream way, following directions on the package. And no matter how they shaved before, 3 out of 4 reported beards easier to cut, less razor pull, smoother, more comfortable. Yes, more comfortable shaves. So men, try the Palm Olive Brushless way yourself. Even in cold or hard water, you get a close, clean shave. And a smoother, more comfortable. Yes, a more comfortable shave.
You get smoother, more comfortable, comfortable shave the Palm Olive Brushless way.
Next time you shave, try the Palm Olive Brushless Shaving Cream way. And now once again, here is our Miss Brooks.
Well, Mr. Conklin soon followed his gradually descending blood pressure down the side of the hill. And shortly afterwards, Mr. Boynton and I approached the gym.
You did very well on those skis I loaned you, Miss Brooks.
I'm still alive, if that's what you mean. But I was rather surprised that they didn't slip off when I hit the tree.
Well, you've got to give Walter credit. That invention of his really does the job.
What? You mean he put the dent and claw on your skis, too?
Certainly. Well, I see the band's getting ready to play a number. May I have this dance, Miss Brooks?
I wouldn't be without it.
This is Vern Smith reminding you to tune in next week to another Our Miss Brooks show, brought to you by Palm Olive Shave Creams for a smoother, more comfortable way to shave, and Colgate Dental Creams to clean your breath while you clean your teeth and help stop tooth decay. Our Miss Brooks, starring Eve Arden, is produced by Larry Burns, written by Al Lewis and Joe Quillen, with the music of Wilbur Hatch. Mr. Boynton is played by Jeff Chandler, Mr. Conklin by Gail Gordon. Others in tonight's cast were Jane Morgan, Dick Crenna, and Gloria McMillan. Listen to this. With Marvelous Vel, D-E-L, you can save 90% of dishwashing work.
A quick soak in Vel suds gets dishes and glassware shiny clean. Even if a bit of food should cling, a touch with a dishcloth gets rid of it fast.
Yes, Vel's activated suds lift off and carry away food and grease. So all dishes need is a quick rinse, and they dry sparkling without washing or wiping.
All pots and pans need is a soaking with Vel suds. Then you can wash them shiny clean without hard scouring.
What's more, Vel is a miracle of mildness. So get new Vel. Save 90% of dishwashing work. King's Row comes to radio tomorrow. If you love King's Row as a novel, cheered it as a motion picture, you'll thrill to King's Row as an exciting Colgate radio drama. King's Row can be heard on most of these Columbia Network radio stations tomorrow and every Monday through Friday at 3:15 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And be with us again next week at this same time for another comedy episode of Our Miss Brooks. Bob Lamond speaking. Stay tuned now for Jack Benny. CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Transcribed.
Schlitz, the beer that made Milwaukee famous, presents The Halls of Ivy, starring Mr. and Mrs. Ronald Coleman.
Good evening, this is Ronald Coleman.
Benita Coleman.
Inviting you to join us again on the campus of Ivy College as the guests of our sponsors, the Brewers of Schlitz Beer. Tonight's program is dedicated to Dr. Marion T. Harrington, president of Texas A&M College.
The taste of Schlitz. The taste so many people prefer has made Schlitz beer first in sales in the USA. If you like good beer, do as millions of people are doing all over the nation. Ask for Schlitz, the most popular beer in history. And now, the Halls of Ivy.
That's around us here today.
Welcome again to Ivy. Ivy College, that is, in the town of Ivy, USA. It's been an eventful day on the campus, not because of the usual activities of the faculty and student body, not because of what anybody did, but because of what one undergraduate refused to do. His action has thrown the college into an uproar, with factions beginning to form on all sides. But Dr. William Todd Hunter Hall, president of Ivy, is completely unaware of the incident, since he and his wife, Victoria, have been at the state capitol all day, attending an educational conference. It's dusk as they're driving back home, and they've just turned up Elm Street on their way to number one faculty row, as Dr. Hall is saying,
"You know, Vicky, if you ever had a rival for my affections, it would be this campus. Returning to Ivy, even after a very brief absence, is like returning to a circle of old and cherished friends."
"It's better. The campus doesn't call you up and want you to play bridge after you come home tired and hungry."
"Oh, of course, I suppose my emotions concerning it are somewhat mixed, as I am both its acting father, so to speak, and one of its sons. Starting here as a freshman student, then coming back as instructor, then professor, and now as president."
"You know, I've always thought that you scholars ought to have decorations to wear on your chest. Like campaign ribbons."
That's a splendid idea."
"Oh, nothing really. I've got ideas I haven't even thought of yet."
"Well, imagine meeting a fellow pedagogue in a hotel lobby, examining his chest and being able to read off his academic accomplishments. Aha, Master of Arts, with oak leaf cluster for advancing through smoke of burning midnight oil." "Yes." "Oh, Bachelor of Science, with purple heart for wounded ego when refused to raise."
"It ought to be a medal for heroism, too. Wearing a vest in hot weather just to show off a Phi Beta Kappa key."
"Vicky, my love, it's an inspiration. Yes. I shall lose no time in suggesting it to the next annual knee pad meeting."
"The what meeting? Knee pad?"
"Yes, dear. NIEPAD. National Institute of Executives, Presidents, and Deans." "It was suggested that we call it knee pad because we spend so much of our time praying for endowment." "Well, here we are."
"Yeah. Home again. Number one faculty row. Still seems to be where we left it this morning. Hasn't moved an inch."
"Nothing has changed, apparently. Even the chimes are running on time."
"Toddy, someday I'd like to meet our bell ringer. I have such a charming mental picture of a little feather of a man swinging bravely at the end of a rope. A sort of human yo-yo."
"Well, I hate to disenchant you, my love, but our chimes are operated by an electrically controlled timing device."
"No little yo-yo?"
"No, dear. Oh. No. The age of electronics has eliminated the factor of human error, while preserving the mellow cadences of the Middle Ages. We are rapidly advancing toward that happy utopia wherein human beings can be eliminated entirely. And the universe will be run by push buttons. Pushed by levers, pushed by other push buttons. Eventually we will..." "Oh, hello, Professor Maxwell."
"Oh. Good evening, Dr. Hall."
"Hello, Professor Maxwell. And how's our favorite astronomy professor tonight?"
"Well, I still seem to be rotating on my axis, and I've just paid my income taxes." "Oh, say, that's quite good. You follow me, Doctor? Axis, taxes."
"Oh, I do, Professor, yes."
"Axis, taxes." "You know, I don't understand why I never think of these things to say in class. Apparently, I'm just a sidewalk wit for the classroom bore."
Well, with warmer weather approaching, you might start holding classes on the sidewalk.
Yes.
You seem to handle the abstract better on the concrete."
"Oh,
yes. You
sure an absolute right. Won't you come inside, Professor?
Oh, no, thank you. It's not really a visit. I just thought perhaps you had heard, but... you were away all day, so you wouldn't have, and you must be tired. It is dinner time, isn't it? Well, I won't bother you now.
Oh, but if it's something important you wanted to see me about...
Well, I... I really... You know, I never noticed it before, but you get a very good view of Castor and Pollux from your front porch, don't you?
Do we?
Yes, indeed. Well, oh, here I am talking shop again while you're politely shivering. I'll drop in another time, if I may.
Oh, please do, Professor.
And make it soon.
Thank you. I will. Good night.
Good night. Ah, he's such a cupcake, isn't he? He enjoys his little jokes so much.
Yes, he's a completely unpretentious scholar and a brilliant one. I wonder what he meant by perhaps we'd heard.
So you're coming. Good evening, Dr. Hall, Mrs. Hall.
Louisa.
Have a nice quiet day while we were gone? I don't know, Miss Hall. I've been too busy. There's a fire in the library.
Oh, good heavens. Did you call the fire department?
It's in the fireplace, Mrs. Hall. Here's a list of phone calls.
Thank you, Louisa. Anything urgent?
Didn't seem to be. Capricorn was here on and off.
Capricorn?
I'm afraid we only have orange marmalade for dinner.
Only marmalade? Well, of course, it's always wise to eat lightly after a long trip. A small saucer of marmalade and off to bed.
Well, we're out of strawberry. I hope you like it. Charlie killed it himself this morning.
Charlie killed a strawberry?
No, Mrs. Hall, fried chicken.
Oh,
I put fresh towels in the bathroom. Hot biscuits, too. Well, got my work to do.
There goes the world's greatest antidote to loquacity.
Capricorn. Oh, I know. That's our little star man, Professor Maxwell.
Oh, yes, it must have been. Then he was waiting to see us. I wonder why.
Well, maybe he wasn't just joking about his income tax. Maybe now that he's paid it, he wants a raise. Come on, darling, let's go in and sit by the fire until Louisa calls us for dinner.
Yes, in the words of William Cowper, we shall stir the fire and close the shutters fast, let fall the curtains, wheel the sofa round. Ah, so let us welcome peaceful evening in.
Oh, that sounds so cozy. Perhaps we can have... Oh, there goes our peaceful evening. Don't bother, Louisa, I'll get it.
Yes. I know it's dinner time. Nevertheless...
Why, Mr. Wellman, good evening.
I couldn't wait. I simply had to. Good evening, Mrs. Hall.
Come in, won't you?
I hope you haven't heard yet, because I wanted to be...
Why, hello, Mr. Wellman.
Oh, I thought you'd never. So you finally got back, Dr. Hall.
Well, not finally, Mr. Wellman. Just.
Just what? Oh, I see. Just got back. Yes.
Did you miss us, Mr. Wellman?
What I missed is it's what you missed. I have been laughing all day long. I couldn't wait.
Well, if it's that good, by all means, let's hear it.
He simply got up and walked out, Dr. Hall. Walked out.
No, I can't wait. Give us the punchline.
Well, Mrs. Hall, you won't believe it. He just slammed the paper on the desk and said, I refuse. Refuse, mind you. That is, he said, I refuse to take this examination because it's too ridiculously easy. Easy. Then he got up and walked out. What do you think of that, Dr. Hall?
Well, who is he? What paper and where?
Young Leslie Gifford refused to take an examination in Professor Maxwell's astronomy course today. Period. Too easy, he said.
Professor Maxwell.
So that's what he
Well, Dr. Yes. Hall, what's the matter? You're not laughing.
Perhaps I missed something.
Don't tell me you don't think it's funny.
Now, Mr. Wellman, if you're telling me that a student made a public demonstration about an examination paper, then it seems to me that the boy was extremely rude.
Rude? How can you be rude to Professor Maxwell? Head in the stars, doesn't even know what time of day it is.
Strange you should say that. Professor Maxwell, of all people, knows with astronomical exactitude why the time of day is the time it is. After all, if it weren't for our astronomers, the farmer wouldn't have his calendar of the seasons, the fisherman his table of tides, the statesman their maps, the sailor his means of navigating a ship into port.
Farmers, steamships, fishing, politics. What have they got to do with young Gifford? I'm asking you, don't you admire his spunk, spirit?
I call it very bad manners, Mr. Whelan. I don't think it's very funny.
Oh, you don't? Well, Mrs. Hall, it may surprise you to know that now that I think of it, I don't think so either. It's a disgrace.
Oh, Mr. Wellman, you gave in awfully easy on that one.
Easy? That's what's disgraceful. That's what they call Professor Maxwell, Easy Maxie. Why, everybody knows it's a pipe course. Why, the students say, take Maxwell's class and get a good day's sleep. That's all. You should give Gifford a medal and fire Maxwell.
Are you suggesting that every time a student refuses to take an examination, you'd fire the professor?
Dr. Hall, this is no joking matter. I mean, what happened to my joke? I thought it was very funny. But Dr. Hall, if you don't speak to Maxwell about his scandalous lassitude, it won't be. Funny, I mean. And you know what I mean. Goodbye.
Oh, Professor Maxwell, of all people. I hope he won't become the victim of one young man's impudence and flippancy.
Aided and abetted by Mr. Wellman's flipping.
Yes. As Addison observed, Vicky, the talent of turning men into ridicule is the qualification of little ungenerous tempers. But lest we be ungenerous ourselves, we'd better have a talk with Professor Maxwell.
Yes, and find out what kind of an examination was so easy that a student wouldn't take it.
Yes, I can't remember any other instance in my entire career when a student complained because he knew the answer to a question.
The other day when I turned up my coat collar to combat the icy blast blowing down Ivy's Main Street, I noticed I needed a haircut. So I dropped into Doc Fish's tonsorial parlor and shaving him for me.
Well, well, Mr. Carpenter, you're in luck today. I have a haircut here that's just your size and at a price you like, too.
Good. Didn't know if you'd be busy or not, Doc. Thought I'd just take a chance.
Shucks, Mr. Carpenter, it's been so quiet today I haven't even got the clippers warm. What'll it be?
Oh, usual thing, scissors on the side. How long you been the college barber here at Ivy, Doc?
Let me see now. 9 to 35 years, I guess. I've clipped more people than a spry politician. Yeah, 35 years last spring. I remember the day I opened the shop here. It was a Saturday. Hot day, too. I put in a mighty good day's work. That was back when the faculty had its hair. And after closing up shop, I went home, sat on the porch, and had a big, cold glass of beer. Man, did that beer taste good. I can remember it yet. I say that beer tasted good, I mean tasted good right down to my tire toe.
Well, Doc, I hope it was Schlitz because
It was Schlitz. What else could it be? Yes, sir, I know all about Schlitz beer. I've been drinking Schlitz for years. Best beer there is.
Why, it's the best.
I know. Schlitz is the best light beer in America. And it ought to be. Seems like all my cronies like it better than any other beer, too.
Well, most
And their families like it. I'll say this. People are drinking Schlitz, and we'll go right on drinking it because it tastes so good. The beer that made Milwaukee famous.
That's just
Milwaukee! Now, there's a town. I know all about it. Mighty nice folks up there. Good town, too.
That's around us here today.
And now to return to the halls of Ivy. It's the next morning, and Dr. Hall, while awaiting the arrival of Professor Maxwell, is absorbed in astronomical calculations. His wife, Victoria, is doing some figuring of her own.
Let me see. 3 pounds at 1/38 a pound. That's 3/8, 24, carry my 3, and 3 and 3, that's 9, and 3 is 12. No, carry my 2, and 3 threes are 11. Do you know what that means, Toddy?
Well, if 3 threes are 11, it means you've carried your 2 too far.
It also means that I've decided we're not going to have breaded veal cutlets for dinner tomorrow night. As the old saying goes, when you can't make both ends meet, make one end potatoes. What are you thinking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, darling. I was 4 million years away.
Oh, well, then I'm glad I didn't order the veal. You might not have made it back to dinner at all. Whereabouts were you?
I was on Nebula NGC 4157.
Oh, I always called it Cloud 9. What's doing on NG 4000?
Well, a terrific explosion took place there 4 million years ago, but no one found out about it until February the 16th, 1937.
Well, where was everybody? Huh? Where was Winchell?
Well, when that happened, Vicky, there probably wasn't anybody.
Oh.
You see, since that explosion 4 million years ago, light rays have been traveling through the vast empty spaces of the universe until they finally enter Dr. Zwicky's telescope.
Isn't that wonderful? Traveling through space for 4 million years and then hitting a telescope right on the nose.
You see, Zwicky set up a system of photographing extragalactic nebulae.
Extragalactic, huh? Hmm. Well, I love to have these little bits of startling information at my fingertips, but I don't think this is one I can use at the women's club. Now, come on, confess. You made it all up, didn't you? Including Dr. Flicky.
It's Zwicky, Vicky, not Flicky. Oh. No, Dr. F. Zwicky is an eminent Swiss scientist, and his hypothesis concerning the catastrophic events observed in the supernovae is one of the questions in Professor Maxwell's examination paper, which I have been studying with great interest.
And Leslie Gifford calls that an easy one. Oh, he ought to be ashamed of himself. What does he think he is, a Zwicky?
Oh, it was easy enough for him. You see, I found out he's one of Professor Maxwell's brightest students. But I also found out that we... Yes?
Excuse me. Mrs. Hall, I thought you'd like to know it isn't dripping anymore.
Well, thank you for telling me, Louisa. I didn't know it was, but whatever it is, I'm very relieved it isn't.
And, Dr. Hall, I don't want to butt in, but... he can't say I didn't tell him that Uranus was in his seventh house.
Oh, I'm sure he can't.
And in conjunction with Venus?
Fine thing.
Of course, once Jupiter gets into his fifth house, things might look a little brighter for him. But that's not until late spring.
Well, if I knew how to get from the seventh house to the fifth house without breaking a lease...
Well, that's easy. You just pass by the sixth house.
But, Mrs. Hall, the way it figures out, Mercury doesn't even show up in his sixth house until June.
Oh, of course, it's stupid of me, yes. But what... oh, now I see. Capricorn.
So that's what you were busy with this morning, Louisa. Charting Professor Maxwell's future, eh?
Like I told him yesterday, he's in an adverse cycle. Dr. Hall, he's a nice man, but I don't know why you got him teaching about the stars. Why, he didn't even know he was born on the cusp.
Well, Professor Maxwell is an astronomer, Louisa, not an astrologer.
What's the difference? It's all in the stars.
Louisa, astrology was an early attempt to study the interrelation of the stars and their influence over terrestrial life. Later, under the guidance of exact science, astrology became astronomy, which has attempted to solve the deepest problems of the cosmos.
That's what I said, Dr. Hall. They're both the same thing.
Perhaps I might put it another way. Now, let me see now. If you remember your Copernicus, Louisa, you must admit...
You can table that answer, Doctor.
Yes. That'll be Professor Maxwell. Show him in, Louisa, will you?
Yes, Dr. Hall. And Mrs. Hall, all it needed was a new washer.
Oh. Imagine whole sentences from Louisa. Maybe we'd better take up astrology so we can communicate.
Well, it'd be worth taking up if I thought we could guide the stars into a more favorable cycle for the... Oh, come in, Professor Maxwell. Oh,
good morning, Dr. Hall. Mrs. Hall.
Good morning, Capricorn.
Yes. I didn't quite know what your housekeeper was getting at yesterday when she asked me for my birth date. I thought maybe she was going to send me a necktie. No, she just presented me with this. It seems to be a horoscope.
Louisa has taken quite a personal interest in you, Professor. I hope you don't mind.
Oh, no, not at all, not at all. As a matter of fact, I have the highest respect for the early Babylonians and their magic. But when it comes to horoscopes,
I guess I have more faith in fluoroscopes. Aha! Now.
Oh, yes, yes, horoscopes, fluoroscopes. Very good, Professor. Very good, Steve.
But I don't know why I'm jesting in the light of what's been happening this morning. I'm quite perturbed. I suppose you know about what?
Well, yes, Professor, but I wouldn't take it too seriously if I were you.
Oh, I didn't, but suddenly it's all over the campus. I realized that young Gifford was just being impetuous, and I don't want him to be embarrassed by this any longer.
That's a very generous attitude to take, Professor.
Do you mind if I speak to the boy?
Of course not, Dr. Hall, but I wouldn't want you to penalize him. He's one of my brightest students, and after all, I suppose I don't pay too much attention to examinations. You see, it isn't what my students put in their blue books that counts with me. It's what they see in the blue heavens. Oh, that's good. Blue books, blue heavens. Do you follow me, Doc?
Yeah, oh, indeed, I do. However, we do have to conform to certain procedures in our educational system, and one of these is examinations. So, with your permission, I'd like to insist that the Gifford boy take the one he brushed aside so cavalierly. For all his brilliance as a student, he is flunking in manners.
Sure, Dr. Hall, I'll take the exam. I didn't think it was going to raise all this fuss. And I'll apologize to old Easy Maxie. I mean, Professor Maxwell.
Thank you, Leslie. I was sure you would.
Well, I wish somebody would explain to me what I'm here for. Everybody apologizing to everybody else and everybody missing the point. What are you going to do about Maxwell?
Well, so that we will all understand the problem a little more clearly, I thought I'd ask you and Leslie each a question.
What kind of a question?
An examination question.
What for? I'm out of school. I admit I don't know everything. But I'm getting by quite nicely, thank you.
Well, so is Dr. Hall, Mr. Wellman, but he's been asking himself questions all morning. And if I may quote him, an intelligent man is never out of school.
Well, school is his business. Business is my school. Yeah, that's very cultured. Well, after all, it's Maxwell. It should be... All right, what is the question, Dr. Hall?
Mr. Wellman, what do you know about Kepler?
Kepler? Oh, you mean Ira Kepler, Wholesale Mattresses, Detroit. Splendid rating, Dun & Bradstreet. But how did he get into this? I know the students sleep through Maxwell's classes, but since when did we supply mattresses?
In our astronomy class, the sky's the limit.
Now, Leslie, I'd like to ask you the same question about Kepler.
Sure, Dr. Hall, that's a cinch. Everybody knows that. Kepler gave us the laws of planetary motion, and he was the man who...
Oh, well, of course, that Kepler. Well, that's different. Astronomy, not my subject. After all, a long time ago, too busy, a man forgets. Slips. His mind, that is.
Now, Leslie, I have another question for you. Can you, very briefly, cite Wesley Mitchell's contribution to economic statistics?
Wesley Mitchell? Well, wasn't he the one who, I know he was an American. Seems to me that he was,
Economics is one of your subjects, isn't it, Leslie?
Oh, yes, Mrs. Hall, but it's a required subject. Mitchell, I don't think
For goodness sakes, Gifford. You're taking economics, and you never heard of Mitchell? You sleep through all your classes? Like, this is shocking. Mitchell studies on business cycles, history of financial, boom and bust. And you never heard of him? How do you expect to earn a living, young man? Married a banker's daughter?
You see, gentlemen, as the French might say, one man's fish is another man's poisson. Kepler was a familiar subject to Leslie, who doesn't know a Mitchell from a meteor. While Mr. Wellman, the businessman, knows Mitchell like his Babson reports. And for him... Kepler might as well be throwing custard pies at Martin and Lewis on television. The point is that brilliance in one field is no cause for intellectual arrogance. And in publicly scorning an examination which was easy for you, Leslie, you accomplished nothing but an exposure of your own vanity and bad manners.
Yes, I know, sir. I'm sorry. I I guess I was a fool.
Oh, no, you're not a fool, Leslie. You just have to remember that pride goeth before a fall, and sometimes quite early in the spring.
This is all very well, but I'm still not satisfied about Maxwell. His course is too easy to pass.
Oh, there always have been, and I expect there always will be, certain courses known as pipes or snaps. The student can coast through these, but coasting will get him nowhere except the bottom of the hill. He benefits only insofar as he contributes. Astronomy is an exact science, but Professor Maxwell is not exacting because he realizes that the real discipline of a student comes from dedication and not requisition.
Certainly sent Mr. Wellman packing, and I hope he packed for a long journey. You should feel well rewarded for your cunning ways, my darling Aquarius.
Aquarius?
It's astrology. I just need to look into Louisa's book. Listen, Toddie, you were born under the sign of Aquarius, the water bearer.
As every college president should be. It makes it easier to carry water on both shoulders and to dispose of any annoying little drips. naming, no names,
no.
Of course, no. And you, my darling, you are Libra, aren't you?
Yeah, Libra, the sign of the scales. This accounts for the fact that I weigh myself carefully every morning and that I've weighed you in the balance.
And found me...
wanting. Me. Or am I just being vain?
Libra, my love, your scales will never be questioned by either the Department of Weights and Measures or William Aquarius Hall. Come here.
Starring Mr. and Mrs. Ronald Coleman has been presented by Schlitz, the beer that made Milwaukee famous. The taste of Schlitz, the taste so many people prefer, has made Schlitz beer first in sales in the USA. Why don't you, too, enjoy the most popular beer in history? Next time, every time, ask for Schlitz beer. And now, here again are Mr. and Mrs. Ronald Coleman.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.
From our sponsor, the Joseph Schlitz Brewing Company of Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and its thousands of friendly dealers throughout the nation. Good night. Ladies and gentlemen, we are happy and proud to announce that the Halls of Ivy has been awarded top honors for 1951 by the National Association for Better Radio and Television. We'll be seeing you next week at this same time at the Halls of Ivy, starring Mr. and Mrs. Ronald Coleman. Mr. Wellman is played by Herbert Butterfield. Louisa is Elizabeth Patterson. Professor Maxwell is Bruce Payne. And Gifford was Herb Ellis. Tonight's script was written by Barb and Milton Merlin and Don Quinn. Music was composed and conducted by Henry Russell. The Halls of Ivy was created by Don Quinn, directed by Milton Merlin, and presented by the Joseph Schlitz Brewing Company of Milwaukee, Wisconsin. We invite you to enjoy on television the Schlitz Playhouse of Stars with Helen Hayes, Margaret Sullivan, Ronald Reagan, and more of the brightest names of Hollywood and Broadway. See your newspaper for Time and Channel. Ken Carpenter speaking. Ladies and gentlemen, the secret word tonight is floor. F-L-O-O-R.
Really?
You bet your life! The more than 3,000 DeSoto Plymouth dealers of America present Groucho Marx in You Bet Your Life, the comedy quiz series produced and transcribed from Hollywood. And here he is, the one, the only...
That's me, Groucho Marx. Well, here I am again with $1,000 for one of our couples. Fetterman, who's first to try for it?
Well, we asked if there were any high school students here tonight, and just before we went on the air, our studio audience selected Miss Donna Eberhard and Claire Thompson. Come on in, folks. I'd like you to meet Groucho Marx right over here.
Welcome, kids, for the DeSoto Plymouth dealers. And if you say the secret word, you'll divide $100 in cash. It's a common word, something you'll find around the house. Donna Eberhard, huh? And Claire Thompson. Oh, nice names. High school students?
Yeah.
What high school do you attend, Donna?
Dennis High School.
Did anybody ever tell you you had very pretty blue eyes, Donna?
No, they didn't.
You don't mind if I don't believe what you just said?
I don't care.
That's what I like, indifference in a woman. How old are you, Donna?
17.
17, huh?
Mm-hmm.
And how old are you, Claire?
18.
18. Well, that makes 18, 17, 9, 20, 15, 30. Well, I guess I'm just a generation behind you two, huh? Donna, would you say I belong to your father's generation?
Yes, I would, because my father's often said that his father used to take him to your movies.
Well, that's true. They used to exhibit our pictures in a covered wagon right outside of Sioux City. And after the show, we'd all go over to Custer Stam for last stand for some pictures. How old is your grandfather?
Oh, about 74.
That's me, all right. Now, Donna, what would you like to be when you graduate? You're not going to be a diplomat. That's Since that field is closed to you, what do you crave in the way of a vocation?
I'd like to be a nurse.
A nurse?
Mm-hmm.
I've had a pain in my back for the last 2 years. What kind of a nurse?
Just a practical, registered nurse.
Practical? Well, aren't they all practical? They are when they talk to me. You have no idea how practical those guys are. And Claire, what is your ambition?
Oh, I want to be an FBI agent.
Are you studying towards that ambition, Claire?
Yeah.
What way? What are you doing to perfect yourself for this?
Oh, playing football. Well, I take subjects for it, a few.
Huh?
I take a few subjects for it, like math and a few things.
Uh-huh. And what do you do after math? No. Now, Clara, are you on the team?
Yes, sir.
Uh-huh. What position do you play?
Fullback.
Are you interested in football, Donna?
Yes, I am.
Uh-huh. What position do you play?
Oh, I don't play any position.
Oh, yeah. Well, what do you do?
Oh, I just follow the team.
You do, huh? Do they ever wonder what you're doing in the shower? How do you feel about athletics in general, Donna?
Oh, I like all sports.
You do, huh? Mm-hmm. Would you consider an old sport like that? It used to be an old vaudeville joke about, the fellow would say, do you like indoor sports? And she'd say yes if he goes home early. You don't hear that joke often very often. I think that explains why. Do you have any extracurricular activities?
We have an honor organization. You have to have a B and 3 A's to get into it.
That's how you qualify? A B and 3 A's?
Yes, it is.
A B and 3 A's. That's... Well, Noah, you'll probably get a sheepskin, won't you? Now, as a football player, do you observe training rules?
Oh, sure.
What are the rules?
Oh, no drinking, no smoking, and you have to be asleep by 9.
Well, that's easy. You get to school at 8:45, you're asleep by 9. What do you do in football training?
Oh, we scrimmage and wind sprints, run laps.
Wind sprints? What's wind sprints? Well, there's no fellow named wind sprints. Charlie wind sprints. You listen to me. What is a wind sprint, huh?
That just sprints, short sprints, 40 yards up to 100 or something.
No, like the Spencer Wales? Is that
no relation.
No relation at all, right? Well, what are the fellas wearing on the campus this year, Claire? Anything unusual?
Oh, they wear Levi's and no belts.
Mm-hmm. You don't wear belts on your jeans?
No. Uh-uh.
What keeps them up besides the police department? Are there any unusual fads among school kids these days, Donna, like swallowing goldfish?
None that I could think of.
Surely there must be something strange they're doing. Now, think hard, Donna. Get those blue eyes working.
Oh, the boys may be dyeing their hair green again.
Well, I guess you're right. There's nothing unusual about them. Well, you're nice children. I'm sure you'll both have a lot of fun with the football team this year. Now, in just a minute, you're going to work together for a chance at $1,500. Right now, I want you to pay close attention to Fenneman.
Across the country, DeSoto Plymouth dealers are known for the fair and square way they conduct business.
In addition to treating you customers with the fairness you deserve, DeSoto Plymouth dealers are headquarters for two of America's outstanding automobiles, the brilliant DeSoto and the beautiful Plymouth. The DeSoto commands attention at every turn with its sweeping, graceful lines. DeSoto takes you over the roughest roads smoothly and comfortably because of its full-cradled ride. The DeSoto is an economical car to operate, and it lets you enjoy the pleasure of driving without shifting. Be sure to drive a DeSoto before you decide on any car. And remember, all dealers who sell DeSoto also sell Plymouth. So look for those two great names linked together, DeSoto, Plymouth.
Okay, now let's see if you two will get a chance at the $1,500. Fenneman, explain the rules.
Each of our three couples has $20. They bet as much of that 20 as they want on each of four questions. A couple that earns the most money gets a chance at the $1,500 DeSoto Plymouth question at the end of the show. Our other two couples are in a waiting room off stage, so they don't know what's happening out here.
All right, now here we go. Let's see how high you can build your $20. You selected nursery rhymes as your category. Now here's your first question. How much of the 20 will you try?
10.
10. How many fiddlers did old King Cole have?
Three.
Three is right. And they're on their way. They have $30. Remember, you're going for $1,500 tonight. Now, how much of the $30 will you try?
10.
Okay, 10.
$10. Who are made out of frogs and snails and puppy dog tails?
Boys.
Little boys is right. Well, the timing's out there. They have $20. Here's your third question. Now, how much of the 40 will you try? Talk right up now.
20.
$20. How many blackbirds baked in a pie?
4 and 20.
4 and 20 is right.
You could well have $60.
Here's your last chance to be the other couples. Now, how much will you bet?
20.
Okay, 20.
What did Daddy promise to bring baby Bunting?
Rabbit.
A rabbit skin.
Yes, and we wind up with a grand total of $80.
Thanks and good luck from the DeSoto Plymouth dealers.
And kids, don't go too
he
far away.
A rabbit, but you couldn't bring a rabbit skin without bringing a rabbit.
I was going to tell the kids not to go too far away because you still have a chance at the big question at the end of the show. Groucho, our other couples are off stage in a waiting room.
Good place for them.
So they don't know, you see, the secret word is floor. Just before we went on the air, our studio audience selected a poultryman and a housewife to be on the program, and here they come now. Mrs. Claire Tucker and Mr. Alan Bell, meet Groucho Marx.
Welcome, children, for your bet your life. And if you say the secret word, you'll divide $100 in cash. It's a common word, something you'll find around the house. Mrs. Claire Tucker, huh?
Yes, sir.
And Mr. Alan Bell.
Yes, sir.
You're a poultry man, is that right?
Yes, sir.
Where are you from?
Philadelphia.
Philadelphia. Huh? And Mrs. Claire Tucker, where are you from?
Well, I'm from Long Beach, but I'm originally from Macon, Georgia.
Well, I suspected you were south of the Mason-Dixon line.
Yes, sir.
People in Long Beach don't have that kind of an accent. Huh? They have an accent, but it's not that one. Huh? It's a kind of a seaweed accent they have. How long have you been away from Macon, Georgia?
Well, I've been out here 8 years, but I lived in Miami for about 20 years in Fort Lauderdale, Florida.
And you prefer Long Beach?
Yes, sir. And my husband's a Floridian, too, and he's gone Californian strictly.
Does your husband know that you go around calling him a Floridian? Those are fighting words in some states. How long have you been married, Claire?
Well, I've been married to this fella 10 years.
Oh, this is Exhibit B?
Yes, sir.
And the first one?
I was married to him 25 years.
What does your husband do for a living?
He's a carpenter.
Is that how you nailed him?
No,
he
was with the water company of Fort Lauderdale, Florida, when I met him.
What did he do there, block up water?
No, well, he came out to see about why we didn't have any water at the house. He was a meter man.
Mm-hmm. And you wanted to meet a man at that time?
Well, we have 9 children.
You wanted to meet a man with 9 children?
I had 9 and he had 4.
Oh. Did he know you had 9 when he came out to fix the meter?
He didn't know it, but he soon found out.
Are you married, Al?
Yes, sir.
Some poultry man. Got himself in the coop. A DeSoto coop, of course. Huh?
Yes, sir.
Now, where is your poultry shop, Mr. Bell?
That's Bell's Poultry Farm, 2636 South Crenshaw, Los Angeles.
All right, you can stop crowing now. Let's not overdo it, Al, huh? Now, just what do you do as a chicken chaser, as a poultry man, huh?
I retail poultry.
You retail poultry, eh? That sounds like pretty specialized work. For example, say a rooster has lost his tail. How do you retail a new one?
I buy wholesale and sell retail.
Oh, I see. Do you sell them live?
No, dressed.
Well, if you put new tails on them, I'd say they were overdressed. How much would you charge for dressing a chicken? Say about 110 pounds.
You and I are thinking of two different kinds of chicken.
Okay, you stick to your chickens and I'll stick to mine. Now tell me, Drumstick, why is poultry so expensive?
Well, our poultry is just a little higher than it was last year.
If they go much higher, you'll need an anti-aircraft gun to bring them down. How much do you charge for a chicken at your place?
Well, just depends what kind of a chicken you want.
Well, this is a shot in the dark, but let's say I want to eat it.
Well,
how much would that be?
Well, what do you want, a roaster or a fryer or a stewer?
Well, I think a stewed chicken would be fun.
Well, for that, we'll give you an old hen.
Well, thank you to mind your own business. The guy from Philadelphia, he's plenty sharp, this fellow. Now, how can I tell if your eggs are fresh?
You don't have to worry about my eggs.
Look, if you think I'm laying awake at night worrying about your eggs, you're a bigger cluck than I think you are. Now, what's the most difficult thing about running a poultry shop, Mr. Bell?
Well, it's where you get your chickens and where they come from.
You're in the poultry business and you don't know where chickens come from? Fine poultry man, huh? Have you ever wondered where your eggs came from?
My eggs come from Joe Breyer's egg farm in Costa Mesa.
That reminds me of an old joke. Which came first, the chicken or Joe Breyer's egg farm? Well, I think you two are a couple of good eggs, and I think you're going to be very happy together. Now, you're going to play your bet your life for $1,500. You run your $20 into more than our other couples, and you'll get a chance at the big question. I can't tell you how much our first couple won, but Fetterman's offstage to remind our listeners.
The high school students won $80.
Here we go. Let's see how high you can build your $20. You selected former Academy Award winners as your category. Now, here's your first question. How much of the 20 will you try?
Ten. $10.
$10. Who won the award in 1942 as Mrs. Miniver?
Greer Garson.
Greer Garson is correct. And you've got you on the way. You now have $30. You're a smart chicken there, Bell. And remember, you're going for $1,500 tonight. Now, how much of the, $40?
$30.
$30. How much of the $30 will you bet on your second question?
$25.
Who won the award in 1945 as the alcoholic writer in The Lost Weekend?
Ray Milland.
Ray Milland is correct. Oh, these people are really funny. You now have $55. Now, here's your third question. How much of the $55 will you bet now?
$50.
Who won the award in 1949 as the politician and all the king's men?
Broderick Crawford.
Broderick Crawford is correct. Now they're climbing to $105. Now, here's your last chance to beat the other couples. How much will you bet?
$100.
$100? Who won the award for her portrayal of Scarlett O'Hara in Gone with the Wind?
Vivian Leigh.
Vivian Leigh is correct. And the wind up of the grand total of $205. Thanks and good luck from the DeSoto Plymouth dealers.
Yes, and now we'll soon know who's going to get the chance at the big $1,500 DeSoto Plymouth question. Because you see, at this point, the poultrymen and the housewife, the people who were just here...
Yes,
have...
I remember them.
They have two...
It's quite clear to me, Fenneman.
I was going to say, they are leading with $205.
That's a shrewd observation, isn't it, huh?
I guess you know the secret word is still floor.
Yes, I do. Still floor is a very nice word.
Just floor. We invited some people to the program tonight, ladies and gentlemen, who make their living handling money. And just before we went on the air, Miss Connie Conray and Mr. Arthur Gruby were chosen to be on the show. And here they are, Groucho. Folks, meet Groucho Marx right here.
Welcome, folks, with the DeSoto Plymouth Dealers. And if you say the secret word, you'll spend $100 in cash. It's a common word, something you'll find around the house. Mrs. Connie Conray, I'm glad to see you. Where are you from, Connie?
Texas.
Texas, eh? Whereabouts?
Crockett.
Crockett?
That's a small town off of Houston.
Oh. Is that named after Davy?
Sam.
Sam. Well, wasn't there a Davy Crockett, though?
David Crockett. Sam Houston.
Oh. Let's slip over to Nacogdoches, huh? Mr. Gruby, what kind of... Isn't that a kind of an unusual name?
Well, I think it is... Scotch and German. I think originally it was Grub, and somebody changed it and made it G-R-U-B-E instead of G-R-U-B-B.
Have you ever shot BB?
Not for a long time.
Do you prefer Groovy to Grub?
I believe so.
Well, if I was hungry, I'd prefer Grub. I never ate any Groovy. Now, where are you from?
New York City, originally.
New York City?
That's right.
And were you born there?
Yes, sir.
Uh-huh. You haven't got much of a New York accent.
Oh, I was born...
Whereabouts?
On First Avenue.
Oh, on 1st Avenue. Huh?
That's right.
I was born 78th Street. On 3rd Avenue. Huh? Not on... I was born upstairs, but I mean it was... It was right over a butcher shop. Huh? You say you handle money. Is that right?
Yes.
Says you handle money. Do you still handle money? Are you still in that?
I'm retired now.
Oh. Well, if you handle somebody else's money, I can understand why. Huh? Well, what have you retired from, Mr. Groovy?
I was with the U.S. Secret Service for 28 years.
Oh, shh, not so loud. I think there's a dictaphone in the microphone. Now, Mrs. Conray, is that right?
Yes.
You're a money expert, too?
Well, it passes through my hands.
It passes through your hands? Well, it passes through mine, too, but I'm no money expert. So. What is your occupation, Connie?
I work in a penny arcade.
Oh. Pennies from heaven, huh? Are you what I see when I drop a penny in the peep show machine?
Oh, no, you're thinking about the dancing girls.
Well, I wasn't, but I could be persuaded. What do you do at this penny arcade?
I'm the cashier, and I change dollars into pennies.
Uh-huh. And where do you do your changing?
At the Joy Lane Arcade downtown Los Angeles.
Arthur, tell us something about your work. What are your duties as a Secret Service man?
Well, our principal... functions is to protect the President of the United States.
Against who? Republicans? Have you ever guarded a president?
Oh, yes. I was one of the... In fact, the last man that shook the hands of President Wilson when he left Capitol, Colorado. And right after that, he had his breakdown and subsequently died. And then in 23, when I was up with President Harding in the Northwest, I left him at Seattle. He went down to San Francisco... And he passed away at the Palace Hotel.
You're a good fellow to avoid. You're what is known as the kiss of death, huh? Well, if that's what you call guarding the presidents, I don't know. We have a different notion. Aside from acting as a bodyguard of the presidents, what are some of the other Secret Service duties, Arthur?
Well, our principal duty is suppression of counterfeiting.
Just how do you work? Suppose somebody gives you a phony $5 bill and you suspect counterfeiters are at work. How do you track them down?
Well, that would all depend. Each individual case has its own presents its own problem. Mm-hmm. In the course of time and an investigation, if it's determined that a certain gang is operating, why, we frequently try to get an agent in with the gang, gain the confidence.
Mm-hmm. I see. And did you assume a disguise?
Well, not in a sense that you wear a false mustache. And
please, don't
make
be personal.
Makeup,
huh?
That is...
I do the insulting around here, Groovy.
That's only in pictures and stories.
What's the most interesting job you've worked on, Arthur?
Well, that'd be pretty hard to say, but...
Well, say it anyway, huh?
Recently, I completed an assignment with 20th Century Fox as a technical advisor on a picture having to do with the Secret Service called Mr. 880.
What does that title come from?
Well, it relates to an authentic case of an old man in New York who passed counterfeit $1 bills.
Well, I'm glad you told me. Now I won't have to go to the picture. Huh? Have you ever destroyed any large amounts of money?
Yes. Shortly after the war broke out, I was sent over to Hawaii, and Shortly after I got over there, I was joined by some men from the Treasury Department, and we got rid of between $15 and $20 million in genuine currency because the idea was that they would keep it out of the hands of the Japs if they successfully invaded the island.
You destroyed $20 million in genuine currency?
That's right.
And how soon after that did you retire?
To be exact, about 5 years.
Well, I think you played it very smart, huh? Congratulations, Arthur. I didn't think you could get away with it. Well, Mrs. Conway, you've been very quiet. Have you learned anything from this man?
Oh, yes.
What have you learned specifically?
Oh.
Just as I thought, you didn't learn anything. Tell us about your penny arcade, Mrs. Conway. Do you have any machines that might interest me?
Oh, I think so. We have some punching bags, skee ball, rifles, kiss tester, and love meter.
What's a love meter?
If you put in a penny, it registers. If you're hot or cold, amorous, shy, bashful.
And is it pretty authentic?
Oh, yes. Depends on how hard you squeeze, though.
Uh-huh. Well, for a nickel, will it keep its mouth shut? Suppose I put a penny in the love meter. How do you think I'd register?
Well, it depends on how hard you squeezed.
Could I try it on you?
I suppose so.
Well, what am I, Connie?
Harmless.
Connie, are you living in a dream world, huh? That is my own fault. I used a counterfeit penny. Huh? Now, you're going to play your bet your life. You beat our other two couples, and you'll get a chance at the $1,500 DeSoto Plymouth question. I can't tell you how much the other couples won, but Fenneman is offstage to remind our listeners.
The poultryman and the housewife are ahead with $205.
All right, here we go. Let's see how high I can build you $20. You selected Famous Williams as your category. Now, here's your first question. How much of the 20 will you try?
$10.
$10. Is that all right with you, Connie?
That's all right.
All right, what William shot an apple from his son's head?
William Tell.
William Tell is correct. And you're on the way there. $30. Remember, you're going for $1,500 tonight. Now, how much of your $30 will you try in your second question?
Oh, let's make it $18.
$18? That's careful figuring, isn't it, eh? What William created the thin man in the movies?
William Powell.
William Powell is correct. They're calling me at $48. All right, you have $48. Here's your third question. How much of the 48?
Okay, you name it.
20.
Oh, no, 40 anyway.
Okay,
$40. All right, here's your third question. You bet $40. All right. What famous politician named William was known as the silver-tongued orator?
William Jennings Bryan.
William Jennings Bryan. Now you've got $88. That's the name of that picture, isn't it? $88? All right. Here's your last chance to beat the other couples. How much are you going to bet?
We have 88. Let's all of it, huh?
Okay.
All okay. Of it. What was the name of England's greatest poet and dramatist? His name was William.
Shakespeare.
And we wind up with a grand total of $176. And that means the poultryman and the housewife with $205 get the chance at the DeSoto Plymouth $1,500 question. Friends, when your car needs service, know-how is the all-important thing. That's why the DeSoto Plymouth Dealers of America ask you to bring your car to them. They have the know-how to service your car quickly and expertly. The service mechanics at a DeSoto Plymouth Dealers are factory trained. Then they keep their skills up to the minute by taking additional training courses at regular intervals. These courses help a skilled man keep his skills up to date. It's know-how like this that gives you better work in the shortest possible time. And when work is performed quickly and expertly, it means a smaller bill for you. So next time your car needs service, drive in wherever you see the sign of a DeSoto Plymouth dealer. And here's the poultry man in the house line for all ready for their chance at a $1,500 DeSoto Plymouth question.
All right, now here we go for $1,500. I'll give you 15 seconds to decide on a single answer, so think carefully and please no help from the audience. Here it is. Each star on our flag represents a state. For $1,500, tell me, what state does the first star represent? In other words, what is the first state to be admitted officially into the Union?
I'll take a stab. My home state, Pennsylvania.
No, I'm sorry. It's Delaware. The correct answer is Delaware, so that means the big question next week will be worth $2,000. Well, you lost the big money, but you won how much? $205 in the quiz. Congratulations and thanks to both of you.
Be sure to tune in again next Wednesday night at this time for the Groucho Marx Show, when the big question will be worth $2,000. And don't miss Groucho's television show, also presented by the DeSoto Plymouth Dealers of America. And remember, all dealers who sell DeSoto also sell Plymouth. Two great cars, both products of the Chrysler Corporation.
And when you drive in, tell them Groucho sent you. Good night, folks, and remember, just be sure to see your DeSoto Plymouth dealer.
For more than 3,000 DeSoto Plymouth Dealers of America salute all automobile dealers from coast to coast who celebrate National Automobile Dealer Week, October 22nd through October 28th. You Bet Your Life is transcribed from Hollywood, produced by John Goodell, directed by Robert Dwan and Bernie Smith. Music by Jerry Fielding. This is George Fenneman, signing off for the more than 3,000 DeSoto Plymouth dealers from coast to coast.
Hey everyone, thank you for tuning in, and I hope you'll come back next week. Please stay safe and do all the stuff that the CDC says for you to do, and so you will be back next week, because it means a lot to me. In fact, it means the world to me. Thank you.